Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. November 16th, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. Have a lot to go over as usual, but probably on the shorter side of what we usually go for today. But there's quite a bit to get to today in regard to, I'm going to say this right off the bat, that I was really toying with putting the election stuff at the end of the show today, just because I'm sure you've seen my opinion from the beginning. I don't think this is as important as the other stuff we're getting to, but it's an easy way to reach people by using what I think is a broken and obviously an illusion of democracy to reach them and make these points clear, which then leads in to the bigger picture. So I'm just saying this to start off today by point being we're going to get into a lot of 2020 election stuff, a lot of propaganda, hype, fake news kind of things. It's shockingly less important than the bigger stories we're going to get to right after that. And that's just probably going to be the last time that I put election discussions ahead of the rest of it. Nonetheless, it's important for the bigger picture to get into today. We're going to talk about 2020 stuff. We're going to talk about some manipulations and lies coming out that, at least in my opinion, I think that they're deceptions about the bigger picture, as I'm beginning to feel almost like this is all part of a scripted plan. Shocker, right? That Trump elected in 2016 to Trump now. And the whole thing just seems like it's going in the appropriate direction to the Great Reset and everything else we're talking about. We're also going to talk about vaccines and Moderna as well as Pfizer. Moderna now saying 94.5. One up in you, Pfizer, even though they're both based on trials that are designed to succeed, as we've gone over, as I'll briefly touch on again today, just so that's clear, but show you more about how even if they worked perfectly, everyone's now going, well, maybe they'll work, but now it's not even going to be done after that. Now we have to decide if we're ever going to go back to normal. Like everything we've always been telling you, excuse me, from the very beginning, this was never going to end. This is your new normal, as they all kept telling you, but people didn't want to listen. We're also going to talk about Highwire. Dell Bigtree has been knocking out of the park with the discussion of this vaccine and the same things that we're talking about. Hopefully he's watching my show. I'm watching his. I think he's doing fantastic work. And he's talking about a lot of the same things that we've been covering, but some interesting points he brought up today that I'm going to share with you, as well as this discussion of the bioethics and human rights universal declaration that I skimmed over a show when I was rushing. And I'm going to really go into that today and show you what that's really about and why the entire vaccine program they're pushing right now violates that in numerous ways. And of course, Denmark, we were going to touch on, but that's already gone another way, but it's an important story. And the Great Reset discussion, the idea that this is not a secret. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is something that is very, very apparent and on its face, as Justin Trudeau's recent comments have just blown it up and everyone's talking about it, but it's always been there. It's not a secret. And the conspiracy theory was always that they're not using this to roll in some kind of agenda they've always wanted, as they literally say, this is the perfect opportunity to roll in this agenda we've always wanted. It's absurd the way people equivocate with these things. But of course, as I said, we're going to start with the election discussions. Now, this is a very important ongoing development because it shows you that this is a broken system. And of course, as most people know, that really means it's working exactly the way that they designed it to. But as Americans perceive it, this is a broken system. This is not a democratic scenario or a representative government or a constitutional republic. It's simply not, both of which those would be representative governments. But what we're seeing here, guys, is as I see it, an ability to reach people who bought into one part of this illusion, and they're now seeing that it's all just deteriorating in front of them, as all the same things that they banked on Trump stopping, even though he allowed them all this time, because, oh, we'll just wait till he gets reelected, and then it's all going to be dealt with, right? Well, suddenly that's not looking so correct. You should be asking whether or not that was always the point. But regardless, that's what I try to come back around to, regardless of whether you believed in Trump, whether you believed that he really was what he said he was, whether he actually was. Well, I mean, and to be clear, it's not over, as I'm going to get to next. That's the frustrating part of this whole thing, is that it's still clearly ongoing. And that doesn't mean I'm pro-Trump. It's not even a pro-Trump point. It's a pro-honesty point. Clearly, this process is not over. The media wants you to think that. Look, is it pretty obvious that Biden, through the media's representations, that he's going to win? Yeah, it seems pretty obvious that this is overwhelmingly in his direction, not to, you know, discuss the obvious benefits he has with the media being on his side, clearly. But at the end of the day, I think it all kind of stems back to this idea that there's much more going on around all of this discussion. And you have to ask yourself whether or not Trump has been playing a part of that this whole time. It's difficult to say. But as we see things like this, Trump campaign drops key parts of Pennsylvania election lawsuit. Of course, you could, looking into this in general, as it says, U.S. President Donald Trump campaign is withdrawing a central part of its lawsuit seeking to stop the certification of the election results in Pennsylvania. It begins to look like either he knows that something is not, that he won't win. He knows either it's becoming clear that he will not win this, and so he's pulling back, or he never intended to win, or as many people want to believe and still could be true, there's a bigger thing happening behind it all, which is about to change everything, which is kind of Q's modus operandi. Never really pans out, but it still doesn't mean it's impossible. But as this needs to indicate clearly that this is not going the direction that people thought that it would. And I'll use this moment to clarify something. I still am on the fence about whether this is kind of a either or kind of scenario, but somebody's been really adamant about telling me that it's not voter fraud, it's election fraud. And I get it. The idea that the voter fraud term would imply that the voters are the ones committing fraud. And yeah, that's correct. That's what it means. But it's being used pretty freely today. It has been for a long time. And sure, that doesn't mean I should do it too. So if we're being explicitly correct, and of course, I just put a video out today saying voter fraud, but I always thought of voter fraud as being the specific version of election fraud that has to do with the votes. But maybe I'm incorrect there. I think probably I am. Regardless, the point that fraud, cheating, whether election fraud, voter fraud, voting machine manipulation, these things are so very apparent and have always been there. As I just released a short video today. It's not new. And groups like NPR and CNN, the Washington Post were some of the most adamant about how big of a deal it was when it was about the Republicans. And now it's a fake news myth story. It's just insulting to your intelligence. But the point is that none of these things should be taken as a pro-Trump point or a pro-Biden point. It's about the truth. It's about which one of these are accurate. And getting to the point about Trump conceding is such a frustrating point. Before we get there, New York Times exposed massive scheme by Democrats in Pennsylvania's election system. Oh, but in 1994, so it no longer exists. That's fake news because it's so long ago, they don't expect you to remember. But think about how dumb it is. The New York Times exposing a Democrat-led massive scheme to manipulate the election. Guys, the point is it's not new. This is they know that this is how this system works. They will cheat as much as they possibly can. And if you cheat enough to get caught, well, that's on you. Because we all know each other cheats. And to call somebody out to accuse them of cheating while you get caught cheating because you know that they are, because we all do, doesn't work out for you. It's just a simple point. They all know this. So, but then you can kind of see that happening right now. This should show you that all the media that's pretending right now that this is some horrible thing, know that it's really just the status quo of our system. And that's why you see things like this. Oh, please don't freeze up on me, crying out loud. That's why this took so long in the beginning, longer than usual, actually, because this is freezing on me. Seems like, yes, I know people point out, oh, he's got so many tabs open, and I do. But nonetheless, it's so frustrating. But this is what we see. Colorado professor compares questioning voting results. Now, understand, not voting voter fraud or election fraud, but just simply questioning voting results to Holocaust denial. Are you kidding me? I mean, obviously, that's a very, there's a reason that it's jumping to that, because then all of a sudden you make any kind of a reference or point and, oh, you're a racist. Well, wait a minute. I thought we were talking about voting results. Ah, you're a racist. It's an easy way to make it seem like that. So what they're saying here is that it's that level. But what about New York Times exposing manipulation of votes in 1994? It doesn't matter. Fake news. Because today you're not allowed to question it. Right? Do you not see how stupid that is? And this is just one example, but I just showed you, I did a whole 15-minute piece about how this is, I mean, CNN, the Washington Post, the NPR, all these groups calling out and investigating and on the record talking to attorney generals and governors who said, yes, here's the proof, right? Clearly, here is examples of people, and it goes in many different ways, dead people voting, as well as Democrats, politicians doing it. So it goes in all possible ways. So whether it's voter fraud or election fraud specifically, or individual voter fraud, as we're talking about it today, where it's an average person who just doesn't like Trump, who wants to cheat, or doesn't like Biden, who wants to cheat, doesn't change the fact that it's constant. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And if you argue that that's not true, then you're just lying to yourself. You're choosing to be dishonest because you don't like that saying that makes you feel like you're helping Trump somehow, even though it's not at all, really. It's just pointing out an obvious fact. Saying that this exists does not mean that it's happening today, even though it very clearly is, I think, on both sides. But this leads us into the point here about lying for their truth, which is happening everywhere, by the way, from both sides. We're going to make two points here. As of, of the two sides within this illusion that is the two-party paradigm, that we can see this happening constantly. Now, in this first example, and it's like I even cringe that I'm even getting into this, but it's important to make a point. Biden won in rigged U.S. election. Now, look, Donald Trump tweeted something out, which is just the news for everybody these days. But he tweeted that basically, I think he even lists it right here. He won because the election was rigged, is what he's saying. No vote, on and on and on, right? You get what he's saying. Now, a child can see that that is not him saying, I lost this. That's him saying it's not a fair game. So that really, this is clear, or as clear as it can be. But let's just even say it's completely unclear. The point is that it's obviously, painfully, clearly not an official succession. It's just not. There's an official standing up and saying, I lost, you know, whatever. That's not what happened here. So the point is that the media and everybody who just can't stand Trump, they jumped over the top and said, he said he lost, he admitted it, he lost. And everybody tweeted, everybody shared, and he didn't. Now, I'm not saying I like Trump. I'm not saying I want Trump to be elected. I don't think any of these people are fit for this job. But the point is that he didn't say that. And it's just frustrating that people, even listening now, despite me explaining it already, are going to say, oh, this guy's helping Trump. That's you being a child. This is an honest, obvious example of him not saying what they're representing it as. And then when he comes out and says, no, I didn't say that, they go, oh, he pulls it back. you guys are 6 years old. The entire mainstream media is a bunch of six-year-olds. And they're yucking it up because they know how much this is frustrating him, because they're controlling the flow of information like we always have told you they were. That's including Fox News. So but the point being, not to belabor this because it's so meaningless, it seems, is Trump speaks out and says, I didn't concede anything. You're making this up because you clearly are. You're taking a phrase that he said in reference to the cheating that he thinks happened, which I think happens on all sides all the time, and you ran with it and made it something that it wasn't. And this is a point. The reason I'm even digging into this is to show you this. He never conceded in the first place, and they all know that. It's just so embarrassing, the state of mainstream media journalism today, right? And that's not a knock on left or right, on Biden or Trump. It's a knock on the current status quo of our broken idea of journalism in this country. It's okay for these people to do this because they have convinced themselves, and they're probably right. They are right about both Biden and Trump, by the way, that they think Trump is a lying, deceitful, dishonest person. So we need to get him out of there. So we're doing right by, you know, fudging the truth in this way. And look, you could say that about so many other points where they absolutely misrepresented the reality because they did not want that person to be winning or be in that position. But how does this help anybody? This is just a petty point, even if they know that it looks like he's losing, just to stick it in. And then everybody defends it online. Well, we know he did. And these people, I'm not even going to get into it, comments that are saying, what are you fighting for, Trump? And exactly like what I was talking about. But this needs to represent both sides of this broken idea. That on either side of this, which we'll get into the next point, people are willing to lie and know that they're lying and then be totally okay with it, at least rationalize, because they have convinced themselves that what they're doing is correct. This is what voting for lesser of two evils does to the psyche of a society. We're allowing dishonesty, cheating, and just bad, you know, what, I can't think of a proper word for that. That's not over the top. We're allowing this to happen. Or rather, we've been socially engineered to be okay with it because this is how our government operates. Now, this is the back and forth. This is from Congress, or specifically from three: Bill Parcell, Gary Connell, Dina Titus. Now, this is on November 9th, and it says to Emily Murphy, an administrator. Now, this is where it even makes it more painfully obvious that they know that what they're doing is trying to play the game. It says, as we write you, President-elect Joe Biden's overwhelming election victory grows. But so just they're asserting their reality before they even get to the point, and realize they're writing to the person who actually declares him the elect president. Right. So that hasn't happened yet. And so here they are writing at them, telling them that's the case because they want it to be, because they're children. It says, by the day, Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris won a decisive popular vote margin, as well as a majority electoral vote college to become our 46th president, vice president. Now, again, to be clear, the tallying of these votes, that's pretty clearly where this is going. But until it has been certified by individual secretaries of state, until it has been declared by this person, it's officially not the case. How many times do we need to say this before it even happens? The media does not declare these things. They're supposed to report the information flow. That's it. But of course, today, they're a bunch of pundits. They're telling you what they think and what they think you should think. That's what their news is. That's why people like me have a job, because I'm telling you my opinion. Of course, on top of all of the facts for you to decide for yourself, the opposite of what they do. It says it is now essential you uphold your responsibilities under the Presidential Transition Act. So it not acknowledging after they assert the fact they want him to say or her to say that, yeah, it's your job and it's your responsibility. But it says yet the Washington Post reports that your office is withholding certification of Biden's victory. Understand, his victory is announced by this person. So you can argue bias. You can argue that they are not doing what they should, but you can't continue to assert that it is the case until this person acknowledges it. That's just simply the way this works, but they're playing the game. It says thereby blocking the expedient and peaceful commencement of the presidential transition. Like, it's just clown world ridiculous the way that they're writing at this person. We write to request an immediate briefing on the implementation of the transitional presidential transition. Now, get this. This is the best part. A candidate becomes president-elect and vice president-elect when they are the successful candidates for the office of the president and vice president, respectively, as ascertained by who? Oh, you, the administrator of the Great Service Administration. Oh, you mean the very person you're writing to? Yes. Yes, it is. So that when they are telling this person, you're doing this and you haven't done this because Biden's the president, and then comes around to say, but he's not until you say he is. So, but he's president, though. Why aren't you saying it? I mean, it's like, I feel like I can't believe that people can't see that. And so that's why I've come to the conclusion here that so most people in this two-party paradigm are just being dishonest because they've been taught to. They know that that's not the case, but they're desperately trying to force it in, even as it clearly seems they're going to win anyway. You see, it's just dripping dishonesty. It says the law explicitly states that the purpose of a presidential transition is to assure continuity in the faithful execution of the laws. Because any disruption, first of all, there's not yet. Their argument is Trump's not doing what he should in this time, but that's just an estate. That's an opinion. If you want my opinion? I don't think he's done what he should the entire damn time. Neither will Biden. So I'm not a good person to ask that question because hashtag two party illusion. But the point is that Trump is doing what he's done. He's been doing actions. He's been speaking. He's been doing what he's been doing this entire 4 years. So what they're doing is they're trying to play it out to seem like he's just stomping away and he's not going to do anything until January. And that's going to put us at risk. So they're playing the whole COVID card to try to make this work, which does seem to suggest that if they're playing this game, does it suggest there is something they know is coming? It's a good point to make there. Because why would they be trying to, like, essentially cheat this at the end when it seems like they're winning? But it says, because any disruption could produce results detrimental to the safety and well-being of the United States and its people. Which is so funny because the United States is the people. Right? So what they're saying is the well-being of us and our possessions and our government and the people too. Your actions delaying the orderly transfer of executive power fly in the face of congressional intent. Wait, I thought it was her job to base it off the electors and the Senate. But no, it's the intent of the congressional body that she's ignoring because they want Biden. I mean, that's what their sentence says, and ignore the will of the people while endangering public health and national security. Of course, you see, that's what they're implying, that Trump is not doing certain things, except they leave out what those things are and how he's not doing them. Of course, you know, typical. The American people resoundingly voted to remove Donald Trump from office by failing to ascertain Biden and Kamala Harris' clear victory, which again is, how can it be a clear victory until the person who officially is supposed to declare that victor has done so, as you admit in your second paragraph? It's like we're living in a, God, it's just, it, I can't, I, I've read this five times and it makes me laugh every time. But it says, for a prompt and effective transition of power in the midst of a global pandemic that must be focused on safety and for citizens. We ask that you immediately, besides all of the actions from both sides of the parties that have been detrimental to Americans and their actions destroying your jobs and your economy and your livelihood, not COVID-19, them. We ask that you immediately provide a briefing on your plans to implement. I mean, this is just off. This is, as far as I can tell, this is pretty unprecedented. Please outline why you believe the clear 2020 presidential election outcome is not apparent and what actions you are taking to ascertain who it waiting for. I don't know, the Secretary of State of individual states to certify the election results, or maybe just all of the electoral, you know, the fact that there's, I actually don't think the ongoing litigation in most of these places is enough to hold up this vote, this declaration, because a lot of them are too broad of a margin and a lot of them are based on things that are a little flimsy. That doesn't mean that there's not obvious examples of manipulation. I just don't think it will lead to overturning the result. Nonetheless, there's plenty of examples of these things that have yet to officially been you don't just declare this and march forward. You wait for the official process. And that's what's so funny is that they're screaming about the official process while they try to get her to go away from the official process. Because again, they're children. Yeah, good enough. Now let's go to the next one. This is the follow-up. Oh, for crying out loud. I hope this doesn't continue to freeze on me. Okay, there we go. The Honorable, now this is coming from the other side, essentially, right? I mean, this is, they're responding to the claims of the people that wrote the first letter. Now it says, on November 9th, Democratic House members sent you a letter that misrepresented the facts surrounding your responsibilities under the Presidential Transition Act. Now be clear. Think about what the last letter said and what they were asking and arguing and whether that feels official or personal. Now listen to the way this is written. Just because it sounds more official doesn't make it more official. But that's something to consider. Now, listen to the difference in how this sounds. I write to correct the record, he says. Under the Act, you, as administrator of the General Services Administration, have the authority to provide government-funded transition assistance, which is really what this is about. Biden and his team getting transition funding so they can begin what they're doing before this is even started, right? I mean, if the election was officially declared, he was officially declared the president, well, then that's how then the process begins. They can get transition funds and they can begin to start things up before January. Right. But in this case, hasn't happened yet. So they're asking for money before, because COVID, though, which is exactly what they said. To provide government funded transition assistance to the president-elect and the vice president-elect. However, the assistance can only occur after there are apparent successful candidates for the office of the president and vice president, respectively, as ascertained by the administrator. Right. So they're making the argument in the other letter that it's obviously apparent. Right. And you could argue that. But it very clearly says, as ascertained by the person that they're lobbying to make the argument. Pretty stupid. There are enough states, and this is a good point. There are enough states contests in question such that there is not yet an apparent president. Now, you could argue, and that does make sense. There are plenty of places right now that are being, I don't think there's a recount that's going on. I don't speak off the cuff because I can't remember which states and what, but there are recounts going on. There are locations that are in litigation that if certain things went certain ways could make quite a difference. So you could argue that. We could argue the other way too. But this is a fair argument, especially when the person who they're writing to, who makes the ultimate choice, is on his side. It says precedent and legislative history present three situations where you may find an unapparent president-elect. And this is what I find is so well done with this. They go on. It says the drafters of the act itself anticipated three electoral situations where there would be an unapparent president-elect. A tie didn't happen, a plurality winner, or a presence of extensive voter fraud or intimidation. The third being applicable to 2020, since Trump's campaign has raised questions about that. Now, that's a little flimsy. Just you have to, I mean, there should be more than just raising questions, because everybody with losing might just be like, all those states are in question. But this says the drafters concluded that if there is any doubt in the administrator's mind, the person they're writing to, the administrator does not have to release transition assistance. Well, what do you know? Doesn't that seem to end the entire conversation? Yeah, it does, because that is literally written in this they're talking about. But of course, the other letter just leaves that out, because as you can see, their mental gymnastics as they're writing to the person saying that he's the president, yet she's the one that makes that decision and hasn't done so yet. It says it right in there that she's the ultimate decider and she does not have to release the money if she has doubt. So regardless of whether she's a Trump appointee or whatever, you don't just get to just jump over that because you don't like who put her there. That's just as dishonest as everything they try to say about Trump. Realize they are all the same. Since states have not yet certified an electoral winner, of course that should be the most important point. And some states are still tabulating legal ballots. Of course there remains doubt. I mean, this is a no-brainer, guys. And you know that I'm not a fan of Donald Trump and that I've openly spoke out about how he is 100% part of this problem. And I am, like I said earlier, beginning to think this is all some scripted theater to keep us on this point. So I'm talking about this instead of what is clearly continuing to roll out. It says the precedent set by the Clinton administration, Democrat, in the contested 2000 election is that to ascertain a parent president-elect, which was what they're asking for, and this is the precedent that was set, there would need to be a concession. Well, that's interesting. That didn't happen. Well, see, this may be an exact reason why they jumped on the chance to force in what he said when he didn't really say it. What do you know? Isn't it funny how these things begin to clarify when you actually do your due diligence? So it's just clear that they're just feeling desperate for some reason. Maybe there is something coming. And they jammed it in and said, look, he conceded. It's right there. Even though he clearly didn't. And then they're going, well, look, see, then now there's no, that's a precedent. It's no longer there. Because he conceded and it's over. It's interesting. But the Clinton administration set that precedent when in contesting an election, 2000. It says, which has not yet occurred this year, or no more legitimate continuing legal challenges. Now, that could be debated, being legitimate or not, based on whose side you're on, which has not yet occurred, in his opinion, which I actually agree with. The legal challenges, there's some that are very real. According to the congressional intent and past precedent set by President Clinton, as of today, there is no apparent president-elect. I would think that's a very straightforward, honest conclusion based on two very clear things. One, that he hasn't conceded, and that's a precedent set in previous legal litigation about this exact situation, as well as the fact that the one person who's able to and his job is to decide and choose not to if they don't want to based on any doubt is the person that they're writing to telling her that she has to do it. This is just dumb. And I'm so tired of dealing with just this basic level kind of manipulation. Because it makes me frustrated that people get swayed by this. And then it brings me another round to get frustrated again because I'm going, well, they must see it, which means they are okay with it, right? So people are okay with lying for their truth. A GSA spokesman recently stated that the GSA administrator ascertains the apparent successful candidate once a winner is clear based on the process laid out in the Constitution. I mean, it just seemed, again, looking at this letter back and then back at this one, dang it, it's going to freeze. It's just clear which one is, you know, more legitimate based on the facts and which one is saying Trump's a bad guy and you're supposed to be doing this because didn't you see? We called it. The media said so. Obviously, I'm making it seem more ridiculous, but that's how it felt. Of course, this is the point I was hinting at is this is what they're trying to say, right? And it's a valid point to be made, but this is not enough to say her opinion no longer matters, which is what they're trying to drive at. They're trying to undercut legitimacy in her position because she's the one standing between them and victory at this point. So they're dishonest people. That's what that means. A little known Trump appointee is in charge of handling transition resources to Biden. Now, you could argue from the other side of it that the Trump appointee is the one being dishonest and they're holding it back because Trump clearly lost. But if you're actually saying that right now, after what we just showed you, you're lying for your truth. Again, it's clear that Trump is probably going to lose this if what we're seeing is accurate. So the point of lying about whether or not this is actually what's happening or lying about the fact that the administrator should be declaring this, even though it's obvious that there's things up in the air. And even if you believe that she's doing it because she's a Trump appointee, it doesn't change the fact that eventually she's going to have to declare it anyway. So why are they trying to force it in this moment? Something seems off. But this is a flimsy argument that they've made about everybody gets appointed by either the president before them or the president that's currently there. So it's a pretty fair shot that it's going to be a flipping of the coin. And in any circumstance, it's going to be, well, I mean, you could make arguments that there's other circumstances there, but just for sake of discussion, Trump or Obama. And you can argue that every time he turns out, it's an Obama appointee that immediately translates to, oh, then that's what happened. Even though that's not a very, that's a dishonest assessment because it could be. Or might not. Just because someone is there put by a person doesn't make it automatically what they want it to be. But of course, this is their argument. Now, to the next point, this is what's happening on the other side. And I'm seeing this like just like the other things we already talked about. Just like the idea that the one newswire or whatever that was that they said was AP's newswire that released this information. Well, it didn't even exist. It wasn't even a real news outlet. But that went everywhere. All the you know, certain influencers on this side of the argument were all about it. Of course, sharing it without any due diligence, which happens on both sides. This is another one, though. But now this, I'm going to show you why I think, just like the last one, that this is a wild stretch of the imagination. Doesn't mean it's false, though. It says bombshell. That's always a good sign that you're being manipulated. That's like the worst word in journalism. The 2020 election took place under a Trump declared national emergency that set an election day trap. Now, first of all, everything after that first quote is completely conjecture, what they think, which doesn't make that clear in the title or ever. So that set an election day trap for the unauthorized assessing of election and campaign infrastructure. Even the title is quite a stretch with even the loose, like, use the word loosely, facts down below that they get into. Now, this came from Natural News with, of course, right in the first paragraph, second sentence, a shout out to how good they're doing. Look at how good we are and our research. Anyway, it says the story begins with the little known executive order signed into existence on September 12th by Donald Trump. Now, this is the executive order. I'll show you next. It's on the next page. Executive order on imposing certain sanctions in the event of foreign interference in a United States election. Now, right off the bat, you might be thinking, wait a minute, how is foreign interference playing into this? Well, they'd make the connection. It says the executive order, which almost no one covered except our channel and a lot of people, by the way, since the day it was signed, President Trump declares a national emergency. The emergency is still in play to this day, which is, by the way, on a side note, one of the reasons why these flimsy and completely undefined national emergencies are used just like we're dealing with in COVID-19 right now. The Trump established national emergency that set the stage for all the other state levels of emergency and all the state lockdowns and everything else. It basically creates a situation where we can see exactly what we're dealing with completely. It makes it more possible. But it says the emergency is still in play to this day. And the 2020 election was conducted under a state of emergency. Now, that's a little bit of a stretch. Because it's not like the entire, they're specifically talking about this, the state of emergency, the national emergency, not the state of emergency, but a national emergency in regard to this specific concept. But it says, which is a crucial point to understand what's coming next. Now it says the EO, the executive order, the president also states the people and organizations located in part outside the United States. Now that's not what it says. I'm going to show you right now. It does not say in part. Now, you can ask yourself whether that was an accident or added in order to give them the opening for something other than somebody outside the country. It's actually quite explicit talking about things that are not from the United States. And that's why I'll show you that this doesn't make sense, but we'll get to it next. Are known to be able to interfere or to undermine public confidence in the United States elections. Now, it gets into talking about covert distribution, propaganda, disinformation, and so on, campaign infrastructure. But the point is, it says, Dominion is Canadian. Skytel, believe that's how it was pronounced, is from Spain. We talked about all of these. I talked about Dominion. Whitney Webb and I talked about Dominion months before that was ever the hot topic that it is right now. We talked about that way back in the middle, months before we got to, this was discussed a long time ago. So it's just so frustrating how these things become hot button topics and everyone starts kicking the ball around without even doing their research. This is something we pointed out way back then. The fact that Dominion is tied to the Clinton Global Initiative in regard to regime change overseas, which is interesting how it's being used against us now. We have Sky. We talked about Smartmatic, which is tied to the Soros open. Jesus, I'm blanking on the name right now. Soros Foundation. That's crazy. Weird blanks all of a sudden. But we're talking about all these obvious examples of these ties. But that in and of itself is something interesting, but does not prove anything. But so what we're talking about, and by the way, I do think it, I've said it in the last shows, there's obviously something fishy going on here. And that's why I did my whole show about how these machines and the voting machines have been an obvious flagrant issue of manipulation and cheating for decades. The same circle of people have continued to float in and out of owning these things. You know, ESNS, the brothers who owned ESNS, he's one of the ones that broke off and started the other company with the Diebold machines and then ended up going back with the other group. So that this illusion of different companies that are ultimately tied with the same group that are then tied back to the Clinton Foundation, then tied back to Soros and all these different people. And this is the point. These are relevant things to discuss. But in this case, what they're trying to say is that, okay, well, Dominion is Canadian. So that means it's foreign, which technically it does. Or Skytel is from Spain. So both represent foreign interference. If something did happen and if they did actually interfere in some way. Now, here's the point. I'll read this last part. Now, I'm not saying this is 100% false. I'm just going to show you why very clearly the executive order they're pointing to would not be even used in the circumstance the way that they're saying it is. But it says that's not even the full extent of what's demanded by the executive order. In Section 8, the order explains the term person also means a partnership, association, trust, joint venture, corporation, group, subgroup, or other organization, which, by the way, is boilerplate. I mean, that's like straight up standard every single time you're talking about this kind of thing. And I'll show you another example of exactly that. In other words, any media organization that assisted in covering up or assisting foreign interference in a U.S. election is specifically targeted by the executive order. No, it's actually not. Because it very clearly, first of all, it's very clearly saying foreign interference, okay? So then it says, well, here, well, let's just jump over to the actual thing. Here's the order we're talking about. September 12th, 2018. Executive order on imposing certain sanctions in the event of foreign interference. Now, I'm not going to go through this whole thing, but I am going to show you some quick points. Reading from the top, it says, now, not later than 45 days after the conclusion of the United States election, the Director of National Intelligence, in consultation with the heads of any other appropriate executive departments and agencies, shall conduct an assessment of any information indicating that a foreign government, not foreign meddling, but a foreign or a company that's based out of a foreign government or a foreign place, it says foreign government. So unless you're accusing Canada and Spain of doing this or some other government through them from another country, which is way off the rails of what they were arguing, well, that seems to put a stick in the spokes, doesn't it? And then it says, or any person acting as an agent of or on behalf of a foreign government. Again, very clear. So if you're going to argue Dominion out of Canada is doing this, then you have to make the argument, if you want this executive order to apply, that they're either in a foreign government or with the foreign government or acting on behalf of a foreign government. So that's very clearly not the same thing as saying Dominion out of Canada was working with U.S. politicians to cheat Trump, which is what they're saying. But it says, has acted with the intent and purpose of interfering in that election. Okay, foreign government. That's pretty damn clear. Here's another one. It says, any foreign person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State, Attorney General, and Secretary of Homeland Security to have directly or indirectly engaged in sponsored, concealed, or otherwise been complicit in foreign interference in a U.S. United States election. Okay, so we're talking about foreign person. Okay, so right there, again, you're going to have to make, it's not about a company that is a foreign company that worked with U.S. politicians. This is clearly about foreign entities, foreign governments. Now, you could make this work if you, some, you know, let's say, make it as if they, that Iran played a part, which is what Whitney and I keep pointing out, that it seems like there's still an obvious buildup there. So if Iran was working with Dominion and working out of Canada or wherever, and then I guess what, worked with Biden or however they want to make that fit, it's just so ridiculous. And the point is that it just doesn't, unless you do that, this does not apply. And I read this whole thing more than once, actually, back when he reported it the first time in 2018. It says against foreign persons, it says, well, I'll read the whole sentence. The Secretary of State, in consultation with the heads of other appropriate agencies, shall jointly prepare a recommendation for the president as to whether additional sanctions against foreign persons may be appropriate in response to the identified foreign interference. Okay, so they're trying to bend this into being about a secret way to go after, you know, the Clintons and the, you know, the deep state and the Democrats, which is what they really mean. Even though every single aspect and every time they mention it is very clearly pointed at foreign entities and foreign governments. I think that was the only one. And you can, I hope you'll read this for yourself. Now, that's not to say that there's not something happening here, but the assessment that's being stated as fact by every other outlet that shared this around without doing their due diligence is clearly suggesting that this is going to be used to go after, basically to assert that they cheated Donald Trump and that the Democrats are the ones, right? Hear it again, claiming that Skidel, now I'm forgetting all the way I pronounced that, but is connected to George Soros and the Democrats, which is a stretch. Again, because you guys, the point was, and we already went through this, Smartmatic was the one tied, and because they're using the software on these, they're stretching this in so many ways, and people are just lying for their truth or believing it because they want to. That doesn't mean that there wasn't cheating or the Democrats didn't manipulate Donald Trump and vice versa. But this, I would argue, is probably a way to get you to not look at the real things that actually happened. Just my take, as always. But here's another example to make the point I said earlier about how that beat was boilerplate almost every time. And another example of how the same kind of argument was made by the same kind of Q circles, where they said, ooh, look at this new executive order Trump did about human rights abusers. it's a secret wink, wink thing he's going to use against the Clintons. That was actually what spread like wildfire. Same way they're saying this one is. Oh, this is going to be used against the Democrats in the illegal election, blah, blah, blah. Certainly possible. Well, as I wrote in this article, redefining hypocrisy. Trump signs executive order allowing the U.S. to seize the property of human rights abusers. Here's the actual order. Or excuse me, the executive order. Blocking the property of persons involved in serious human rights. Now, you could see how this could sound like that. Okay, well, clearly these are people that are, you know, the argument is, and I think it's pretty clear. I think I've improved it in shows and articles I've written that these people are involved, at least in complicit with human trafficking or war crimes, right? Continuing carrying out war crimes and invading countries and destroying economies. I mean, there's clear human rights abuses taking place there. So you could argue that foreign governments, but the point being that Trump did all that too, but don't want to hear that. The point being that they could use this against those people. But if you care to do your due diligence and not just listen to what the pro or, you know, whatever, what some people are saying about it, if you actually just went down to the bottom first and read what it says very clearly. And I made this point then. And of course, even then, I was called I was shilling for the Clintons, apparently, whatever. It says the order is not intended and does not create any right or benefit, substantive or procedural, enforceable at law or in equity by any party against the United States, its departments, agencies, entities, officers, employees, or agents, or just any other person in regard to the United States. So the point is, they made it very clear, probably because they're thinking in their minds, shoot, if I write this, they could use it against me next year when I, whatever, because I'm doing these things, right? So they made sure it's listed that if you're a person in the United States, if you're a department, an agency, an entity, an officer, an employee, or an agent, or any other person in the United States, this cannot be used against you. Meaning the same people that they said was going to be used against can't be. Says it right there. And in case you were unclear about it, this is the point that I was talking about. The term person means an individual or entity. The term entity means a partnership, an association, a trust, joint venture, corporation, group, subgroup, or other. It just means basically anything. An entity could mean a person. So any person from the United States, it says it right there, cannot be used in the way that the Q crowd swore up and down was going to be used to make the tribunals happen, to march these people to Guantanamo, and it didn't happen. And now he's apparently about to be replaced by Joe Biden, and still nothing has happened. But the point being is this was something that was stated, and it was very clear in there that it wasn't able to be used. And here we are seeing the exact same thing happen again, where they're saying, here we are. And again, I'm not saying I know for a fact, but I do know for a fact that this executive order, if used legally based on the terms it uses, cannot be applied to the Democrats, even using a foreign company to manipulate the election. Seems pretty clear to me. But what, I'm just one guy, right? Hopefully you guys are out there thinking for yourselves. All this, as always, will be in the show notes, as always. But of course, this is the kind of thing we see. For those interested in election news, I cannot verify that it's true. Then why the hell did you post it, man? Let me put it this way. I don't know who this person is. As just an individual, this guy's got 46,000 followers. This is my point. This is the kind of person that influences these people on the pro-MAGA Q type side. You have a responsibility, just with that many followers. If you don't know this is true, then you shouldn't share it, because you damn well know that by sharing it, people are going to run with it. They're going to talk about it because you shared it, because they want to believe it. And down here, I've been thinking about this executive order. Oh, I can't believe it's happening. Oh, we always knew. I don't even know if this is true, right? They read the headline and already started typing. We need to be better than this, people, as the American people, as human beings, as individuals. And the sad part is, again, I feel like it's so readily apparent that I'm saying all of this from a place of concern, place of love, that I want people to be able to see through all of this stuff, right? I mean, but at the end of the day, you have all these people out there that are going to be attacking me just because I'm not agreeing that this means Trump won or that it has to be what they always thought was right. Even though I can argue everything they're probably arguing about Biden, it's broken. And we as individuals need to realize that about ourselves, that we cannot rely on one individual, no matter how great you might think they are, to solve the problems that they have already created. It's on you. It's on us as people to stand up and do it. Not put your hopes in somebody that you hope might do what you hope might happen. It's just, it's just lobbing it out into the ether and please work for me after years and years and decades of it never actually panning out. There's a term for that. I believe it's called insanity. Doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. Now, moving past the election stuff that already took way too long as far as I'm concerned, but I thought it was important, and hopefully you felt the same, that those things hopefully can reach people from all sides to realize that you have all been fooled if you're still invested in the two-party paradigm. But going over to COVID-19, this is a really, really interesting development. Now, I have been saying this for how long? I mean, since the very beginning of this, since we talked with, referenced Dr. Francis Boyle and his admission that, in his opinion as the scientist and the drafter of the U.S. Biowarfare Act, which they still use, saying that these things are biomanipulators, they're bioweapons. That's his opinion. That's what, and by the way, that's been now asserted by people in Congress, by foreign governments, but we were all censored for it back when we first discussed it because you're not allowed to discuss it until the media first says it's okay to discuss it. That's called freedom, in case you were confused. But coronavirus came to Italy, it says, almost 6 months before the first official case. Where have you heard that before? Probably this show 1,000 times. But now the World Economic Forum is admitting that. So what do you, you have to reflect on what this actually means. Now I'm just going to go through this. It's pretty short. There's the development of this. It needs to show us, first of all, that the narrative they've been feeding us from the very beginning was false. Not only false, but they knew that it was false. You realize how many governments have come out and said this? I've rattled them off 1,000 times and I probably forget one every time. Italy, Spain, France, Germany, Taiwan. I think I said Japan, Italy, obviously. I know there's at least a couple more, but they've all, Canada. Canada is the most important one. Canada came out, and it's sort of a similar scenario. Canada came out and said that they have examples of COVID-19 existing in Canada in 2013. They have it from frozen waste samples. That's why it was able to be seen. It was frozen. They have it all the way since 2013. And nobody talked about it except me, I guess. I mean, I didn't see anybody actually talk about that. Maybe other independent media. It's a huge story. But one, maybe two, seriously, five, six, seven governments saying this goes long before 2020. It shows you that this was existing in the world before we said, or let's just put it this way so it's very honest. Before it was noticed in China. So before it was noticed in China and the U.S. government jumped up and grabbed the microphone and said, China did it. It was from China, before anybody had no evidence, no investigation. And right then, knowing that we had examples of this all the way back then, right? We have examples of people pointing out that the vaping illness in the United States in 2019 looked eerily similar to certain things they were talking about and experimenting with, but nobody wanted to talk about it. They shut it down. This needs to show us that this is something that was either already released, circulating, manipulated, or I think the most important point, that it is not as even remotely as severe as they try to make it out to be. You're telling me this thing was 6 months ago circulating Italy and nobody had a concern about it all the way until after China noticed it? How does that even make sense? If it's even close to as severe as they say it is, that should have been 6 months full of unexplained deaths and people falling over and all kinds of chaos. But no, Italy had one of the most severe circumstances in the world. From COVID-19, we're told, not from the lockdowns, which is what I think it actually was, in combination with the flu vaccine that was pushed out in Italy. In one of the most, there's only a few places out there that did a huge push of the flu vaccine right before this. They're one of them. And you know why we talked about that. 36% more likely, according to a Pentagon study in regard to coronaviruses as a category. That's their study. So this shows us that if this was happening 6 months ago, that if either people would be dying, like they keep telling us they would, because nobody was treating it, nobody was social distancing, nobody was locking down, nobody was wearing masks. So it would have been chaotic and it would have been catastrophic. So they want you to think. But apparently nothing happened until China said something happens. And then suddenly Italy just broke out. I mean, they really must think we are the dumbest people on the planet. And you're going to laugh at what they say in regard to their, I guess, you couldn't call it a conclusion. It's just a quick statement. But it says COVID-19 was circulating in Italy from September 2019, according to a study by the Italian National Center Cancer Institute. Excuse me. Now, you know why that's interesting? September was exactly the same time frame we're talking about. September, October, November of when this thing was just really popping off, whatever we're talking about, from Fort Detrick around in Maryland. the examples of the ground glass opacity with the what they claimed was vaping illness, but there was never proved to be vaping. Because remember, ground glass opacity was what they said was the big focal point of the COVID-19 when this all started, and they just suddenly stopped talking about. There's also the nursing homes up to the north that had huge outbreaks that they just said was the cold. Also had ground glass capacity in the lungs and very weird symptoms. They couldn't, the same things. This is right after Fort Detrick had a containment leak and was shut down. And when Bohr was asked about it, they said, we can't talk about it, national security. You know, Fort Detrick, one of the leading BSL-4 labs in the United States, if not the, that works on coronaviruses and bats, that works on Ebola and all the worst ones, specifically coronavirus and bats. Why hasn't that been discussed? Right? You're not even allowed to ask that, especially then we know that the World Military Games happened right near Wuhan, right in China, right after all of that. Remember, and remember the time frame there where the U.S. wins and they didn't take all their customary social media, didn't post anything about it, and they actually came in way lower than they usually do. Number one military in the world, and they came in like way lower than they usually do. People did horribly. There's even instances of people who were reportedly sick in the U.S. military, right? And then suddenly in Italy in September. Now, I actually said that wrong because the World Military Games is after September, but nonetheless, the point, the timing of when this is popping off, the idea that this was, and I don't think it makes it clear where this could have come from at this point. I have thoughts on where that is, but all we know at this point is it did not start in China in 2020 or, you know, December 2019. This means it could have started anywhere. But it says Italy's first official, that is if it's anything at all, remember. Right? There could be a bioweapon that's made to be not very severe that they use to make it seem like it's something more severe, or it could be something that they're just hyping up from combining flu and pneumonia, which we just proved that they are, admitting that the mortality data is including flu and pneumonia. The last severe season, high estimate, combined flu and pneumonia was about 110,000 deaths. So if they're combining flu and pneumonia with COVID-19 and using that total mortality, that's a guarantee that 110,000 deaths removed will lower the mortality rate. I mean, that's just basic. That's why they're including them, because they want it to be more severe. I mean, I don't understand. I don't think there can be any other explanation. Italy's first official COVID-19 case was detected in February. So you're telling me from September 2019 to February 2020, they had COVID-19, as Italy has just admitted. The World Economic Forum has just admitted. And from September, October, November, December, January, February, 6 months go by and nothing happens. No reporting, no CDC discussions, no World Health Organization discussions, no outbreaks, no deaths, no spike, nothing. How are we supposed to believe that? The new study, which re-examined samples from a lung cancer screening trial between September 2019 and March 2020, suggests otherwise. New study which re-examined samples. Oh, basically saying that the date when it began, which is pretty obvious, right? I mean, it's clear that they're finding it there, that it was there before they say it started. It showed that of the 959 healthy volunteers enrolled in the trial, 11% had developed coronavirus antibodies well before February. So that's their point. The study suggests otherwise because their studies are going, wait a minute, how can you have antibodies before February if it started in February? Ask yourself why we're not doing the same thing here. I think you know why. Because if they were, we would very quickly find out people have had antibodies for 6 months, which wouldn't make sense to the narrative that China did this, or at least that it started in the time they say that it did. The study by the university also supports the theory. So there's more than one study confirming this. We need to understand this is what's happening. It says the new wave was circulating in Italy since September 2019, according to the new study from the Cancer Institute, signaling that COVID-19 might have spread beyond China earlier than previously thought. Talk about a bias. That is the most intellectually dishonest thing I've ever seen. How can you possibly deduce that 6 months before anyone even noticed it in China, that if it's somewhere else 6 months before that, then it must have just come from China before then? That's wildly dishonest. The honest answer there is that it could come from anywhere at that point. If it made its way to Italy in 6 months ago, it could have made its way from there to China well within that time frame. They know that. There's obviously an agenda to make China the bad guy, even from the World Economic Forum, Ed, because they're using that to drive in the Great Reset, which obviously has focal points on artificial intelligence, which obviously from the AI plan and, you know, Eric Schmidt and the whole thing, that their point is to overtake China in that specific regard. And if that's the case, well, then China can't be the good guy or even an ally. So they're using them as the point, the focal point. We need to beat them. We need to get rid of all of your legacy systems that you like and you prefer because it's not good for you. That's where this is going. That's why I think they're pushing it in to be China. But it says, the World Health Organization has said the new coronavirus and COVID-19, the respiratory disease it causes, were unknown before the outbreak was first reported in Wuhan in central China in December. Right. So does that seem to challenge the basic and dishonest assessment that it comes from China no matter what? Italy's first COVID-19 patient was detected on February 21st in a little town in Milan. It says, but Italy's researchers' findings published in the scientific magazine, INT, show that 11.6 of the 959, we just read that part. I thought there was one more part I wanted to read here. It showed that four cases dated back to the first week of October were also positive for antibodies neutralizing the virus, meaning they had got infected in September. Just speaking with Reuters, why is nobody talking about this? Because their job is not to tell you anything that challenges the narrative. Whether it's because they're liars or because they've been convinced that any kind of hesitancy of any kind is dangerous right now. So the truth is dangerous because it makes you question their process or the vaccines or whatever. So now truth, if it leads to hesitancy of vaccines, even if it's true, is not allowed. That's how YouTube is. That's how all of these are now. Here's Reuters is speaking about how the entire narrative we're basing this on is simply not true and nobody talks about it. This is the main finding. People with no symptoms not only were positive after the serological test, but also had antibodies able to kill the virus. Sounds quite a bit different than what we're dealing with today. And the fact that people in Italy for 6 months, they seem fine. So then ask yourself why there was a huge spike in all this stuff after the fact if all these people had antibodies. Oops. Of course, they're going to say, well, because you can get it again, except that's already been shown. That's just a completely flimsy argument. But the point is that if these people supposedly had antibodies, they shouldn't be able to get it again, which means that either the lockdown caused all these problems or the entire thing was manufactured or there was something else going on. We can't forget the original discussion about whether or not this was focused in on specific types of genomes, and Iranian and Italian genomes are very similar. We already talked about this going back years, even though people don't want, they go, that doesn't make sense. Just look it up. It's very simple. It goes back a long time. And so you could argue that, and remember, Iran had an untraceable case that popped in the middle of nowhere. So you could argue that maybe there was something that was placed there. And that's what started all this. And it jumped over to Italy and it got out of control. And these are certainly possible things. And these things seem to suggest that, because why did Italy get even more sick after it if they already had dealt with it? It means that the new coronavirus can circulate among the population for long and with a low rate of lethality, not because it is disappearing, but only to surge again. Did they not just very clearly say a low rate of lethality? Excuse me? So why are we doing all the things we're doing? Don't you love how they make the argument that it's not very lethal and that's why it continued to circulate and that's why it explains this story, but then don't use that same logic to argue that it's low lethality, so we don't need a vaccine, we don't need to lock down. No, you're in danger. Italian researchers told Reuters in March that they reported a higher than usual number of cases of severe pneumonia and flu. What do you know? Doesn't that sound very similar to what we're talking about now? In any case, guys, the fact that they're arguing this and no one's talking about it is very revealing. But on top of all of it, I've talked about this numerous times. I've talked about the idea, or rather the possibility, that the U.S. government, just like with the Spanish flu, which was actually the Kansas flu, is responsible for this. The red dots are the coronavirus hotspots, or it was a few months ago. The red is where the U.S. military is present. So as we're watching the overlap of where the U.S. military is and where the coronavirus has broken out, so we're told, it's an interesting overlap. Correlation's not causation, but it's something for you to consider. Because if you actually know the history of what is called the Spanish flu of 1918, it was actually spread by the U.S. military. That's an easy fact to look up. It's on Wikipedia, for crying out loud. If you look, and that doesn't mean Wikipedia is always true. It just means people agree with it, because it's the case, and you can easily look it up. General Pershing, on record, was saying, we don't care. It's more, what we're doing is more important. We kept putting people out and we kept bringing troops back. And all it did was increase how virulent it was. They knew this. They did. And this is easy to look up, but yet they called it the Spanish flu because Spain was the first one to be honest about experiencing it. And as usual, truth has its consequences. So they come out and they say, we're dealing with this. And they go, you did it, it's Spain. Does that sound familiar? Sort of like what we're dealing with now. China, you did it. China flu. It's just amazing how we can't think back on our own history and how often these things happen. But considering the possibility that it was spread in this way, it does seem to make sense with the rest of the story. As without it, well, the story has some holes, doesn't it? As always, that doesn't mean it's the case. But if you're unwilling to ask yourself these questions, well, that says more about you than anything else, because these things are very relevant to the larger story. Now, getting into the next discussion here, the vaccine discussion is very, very important to this whole thing, because that's obviously one of the parts of this whole narrative and what they're using to justify. What they're using to justify these vaccines is something that's just simply not there. We literally just showed you the World Health Organization document from what? I think it was July or June, where it literally says that this thing is 0.02% or 0.2%. And the majority of people not in the hotspots are at actually 0.09% infection fatality rate, which puts it at about a severe flu. And anybody under 70 is in pretty much under 50, you have like a 0% chance. But over that to 70, it becomes about, you know, anywhere from again 0.2 to down to zero. This is simply not enough to justify what they're doing. And anyone honest can see that, which is why you're getting so many doctors and professionals and just anybody with, you know, people in positions of power in governments that are fighting against this as well. I mean, I really believe more people have come out against this than the experts they keep pushing in your face, because it's very clear. Shockingly so. But here's Moderna saying that its vaccine is 94.5% effective, which I just love, because here's Pfizer saying 90%. Moderna's like, oh yeah? Well, here's 94%. Right after one another, of course. Right? Just really? But that's not even the point. Whether they mean it or they said it for no reason. First of all, remember, just like with Pfizer, these are coming from these are their information. These are self-reported results. But before, not even to get into this, just to quickly go over this for the 15th time. And this isn't the only place to talk about it, but Forbes reporting the COVID-19 vaccine protocols reveal that trials are designed to succeed. It says right here. Now, I want to make something clear. This is interesting, because it points out that the pharmaceutical companies intend to do trials ranging from 30 to 60,000 participants. Right? Now, apparently, what they are doing is, especially in regard to Pfizer, bringing in 45,000 people. For what reason? I mean, I don't even understand how it makes sense. But then only testing 164, or in the case of the interim, 53, or specifically to make it more clear, not only testing them, but only having 53 people that have something to test, right? So 53 people, or let's just go through this as it says right here. The first surprise found upon a closer reading of the protocols reveals that each study intends to complete interim and primary analysis that at most includes 164 participants. This is from Forbes. Easy to look up, not a shock, or not a secret. But it says interim analysis success requires a 70% efficacy. The vaccine or placebo will be given to thousands of people in each trial. Now, that's the point, is the placebo, yeah, is being given to thousands of people. But for Moderna, since we're talking about them today, Pfizer's worse, by the way, we just did a show on it the other day. But for Moderna, the initial interim analysis will be based on the results of infection of only 53 people. So whether they've got 45,000 people that come in and get placebos or not, only 53 people have infection. So if they can get a small percentage of those people to show that they're having some kind of a lessening of symptoms from it, then that's a success. And then with that small number, all you need is a certain number within that to be claiming 94%. But 94%, as I'm going to show you from Del Bigtree's discussion in a second, is in realistically, when you're factoring in the other 40,000 people that are in the study, which is how they're doing this, they're claiming that's 94% for everybody in the study. And that's obviously not true. It says the judgment reached in interim analysis is dependent upon the difference in the number of people with symptoms, which may be mild, in the vaccinated group versus the unvaccinated group. Moderna's success margin is for 13 or less of the 53 to develop symptoms, compared to 40 or more in their control group. Right? So 13 people 13 or less of those people to develop symptoms, meaning that the other people who got the vaccine are supposedly working. But what's interesting, as they declare in here, is that in most of these cases, they're only lessening the symptoms. As it says here, Moderna, in their primary even, not their interim, but their primary, which is what they're talking about now, only 151. Only 151 people. And that's how they're testing this number. It's a guarantee to get a much higher percentage, don't you think? But it also goes into the idea that it's all about, they don't give it, this says these trials certainly do not give assurance the vaccine will protect from the serious consequences, which is what we're all talking about. It says one more of the immediate questions is whether it will prevent infection, which is, again, what we are thinking about. If someone takes the vaccine, are they far less likely to become infected with the virus? These trials all clearly focus on eliminating symptoms of COVID-19, symptoms, and not infections themselves. Asymptomatic infection is listed as a secondary objective in these trials when they should be the critical importance. It appears that all the pharmaceutical companies assume the vaccine will never prevent infection. Never. Which is exactly why we're now hearing them all say, well, it'll never go back to normal. We'll have to deal with this next year. The vaccine might not work, because they're not even trying. In regard to actually, because they had to rush this out because of whatever thing they're working on, based on something that is not being verified, that is totally unsafe. And they're using a small grouping of people to make that claim. And if they're not preventing infection, if they're not stopping serious side effects, if all they're doing is lessening the symptoms of essentially the cold, that is a guarantee that this will forever be something that we need, which is exactly what Dr. Fauci is now saying. As he says, or the creator of Pfizer's COVID vaccine says, the jab needs time to make impact. Life won't return to normal until next winter. Remember 15 days to flatten the curve? Remember when they kept saying, oh, just wait till we get the vaccine, we'll all go back to normal. But apparently that was a lie too. Because now, no, just get the vaccine and then wait for the second dose and then wait for pharmacovigilance and then wait for us to make sure you're safe and then we'll talk about it. Quite a bit different, isn't it? As he says, we have to get people to take the vaccine. Fauci tells CNN, adding no return until normal until next summer. So they're all over. It's you got a long time is what they want you to understand. A long time. And this is the point I want you to take away from Fauci's comments. Now that all of them are openly admitting that regardless of the vaccine, we will not go back to normal until next summer or even next winter, realize one important thing. They knew this was the timeline. Excuse me, from the moment they lied us into lockdown, right? So they are not, Fauci, let's just say Fauci in particular. Do you think Fauci was confused about what the process is of delivering a vaccine? Do you think Fauci was not aware of the limitations of infrastructure and vials and vaccine, all the things we might need they're talking about extending this, or the delivery of it and how that will take time and we need personnel? And they knew all this when they first started. They knew this was the case. So when they kept saying, just get the vaccine and we can go back to normal, they knew in their mind that was just obviously not the truth. They wanted you to think it was the truth so you didn't freak out. Now we get the vaccine. They're saying, well, no, now it's going to be a couple of years after that, though. Even though we literally said the opposite when we wanted you to think a vaccine was going to be the safe. I mean, the point is they're just giving you one more step, one more step, one more step, one more step. And then you look back and 20 years ago, same thing that happened with the Patriot Act and all the same kind of things. I feel this is all interconnected. They lied to you. They knew that this was going to be the way this process. And even if you want to pretend they lied to you to keep you safe because they didn't want you to freak, it doesn't matter. They're lying to you. And if you truly believe that they're lying to you for your best interests, well, I don't know what to do with you, because it's just your history is shockingly clear that they use that. They abuse your trust in every possible turn. I could do 25 shows, 5 hours a piece with how many times they have continued to lie to you. But here's the other add to this. Even as they're saying, no, now the vaccine won't even bring it back to normal. We need to get it. We need to wait. We need to make sure it works. We need to blah, 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 whatever they want to continue to say. Well, guess what? Even though they're telling you that's the case and the vaccine will do this and that, on top of all of it, it turns out it's actually going to cause a lot of bad things too. Shocker. Who didn't say that? And guess what? When we say that on YouTube, we get deleted. But here's NBC saying the exact same thing, that this will cause a lot of negative side effects and it will be very damaging and very hurtful. And it's only because you're in so much danger, except you're not, though. And it's not really happening like they're saying it is. But we don't consider those two things simultaneously, apparently. Don't know why. COVID-19 vaccines may have potentially unpleasant side effects. That is the understatement of the year. Unpleasant side effects. It says Pfizer is expected to seek federal permission to release its COVID-19 vaccine by the end of November. Oh, and that's another point to make here. That's what this is. Right here. The point they're making, first of all, is they keep saying they're likely to, and they keep saying, well, we're going to do more safety testing after the rush because, you know, you're in danger, which I just love that they're not safety testing because your safety. Dumb, but they're going to continue to rush it out because you're in so much danger. But what anybody honest can see, which Del Bigtree points out too, is that they're going to apply for emergency use authorization. And then once that gets approved, which it will, they're not going to keep testing. Because there's no motive. There's no profit reason to. They've already made it. It's already been accepted. They're already buying it. There's no reason to keep testing. Everyone out there going, that's not true. Or you're convincing yourself that they care about your safety. They don't. This company, Pfizer, doesn't. Your safety is a side effect of what they're working on. If they make a product and it makes money for their stockholders, and they can do it without going to prison, well, that's a success for a corporation. And if you don't believe that, then again, I just don't know what to do with you. The history is there for you to look at. The current example of where we are is enough to look at. But the point is that they're going to do this. They're going to get this the past, and they're no longer going to test. And as Dell points out, what they essentially do is they argue that they, since it's out, and since people are in so much danger, again, which they're not really, that they're going to argue a moral imperative that, well, we can't just give these people the placebo because they're in danger. So we got to give it the vaccine. And then they're going to pretend that that's why they're no longer testing. Not that it's a, you know, we're bound by yours. We're so, it's a righteous reluctance. We have to do it. But that's not the case. But it says they're seeking exactly that federal permission. So once they get it, end of November, and it says a move that holds promise for quelling the pandemic, but also sets up a tight time frame to make sure consumers understand what it means to get the shots. You'd think. You mean the thing that they could be doing now, but aren't? Oh, it's our fault, though. It's a short time frame because of all this. No, they never inform you about all this stuff. When you ask questions in your doctor's office, they give you weird looks. I've seen people get kicked out of doctor's offices for asking direct questions about what's in a vaccine or whether it's safe or anything, which you should be allowed to because, you know, informed consent at all. Except that these doctors these days are not even really taught that. They're taught that they know what's right. You know, half these doctors have God complexes, as far as I can tell, that believe that they know everything and they know because the CDC said so. That's how they're taught. Oh, you got this? There's a pill for that. I'm a doctor. It says the vaccine and likely many and most others will require two doses to work, injections that must be given weeks apart, which has always been the point. They're going to monitor you from step to step. And then once you get the second one, they already talked about pharmacovigilance, 2 years. So if they want every American to get this, that means every American will be monitored, your body, your biometrics, everything, heart rate, you know, every daily feelings, what you do on social media for 2 years. Gee, I wonder if that's the point. Scientists anticipate that the shots will cause innervating. Let's see what that is. Causing one to feel drained of energy. Enervating. That's an interesting word. I've never seen that. Enervating flu-like side effects. Company protocols show scientists anticipate that the shots will cause enervating flu-like side effects. So the fact that it's causing flu-like side effects, they want you to think that that's somehow like a side effect of that. No, you're getting sick. That's what that is. You know, I mean, the fact that you're getting negative side. No, to be clear, these vaccines we're talking about are these genetically manipulative ones. It's not like there's flu in your body, as far as I understand it, but it's odd if you're getting these side effects and we're talking about this genetically manipulative vaccine. What does that even mean? How is it causing you to get sick? That sounds very alarming to me. But it says including sore arms, muscle aches, and fever. Yeah, that sounds terrible. I mean, this sounds like the opposite. If this is what it's giving me, that sounds dangerous and I don't want it. That could last days and temporarily sideline some people from work or school. Days? And even if a vaccine approves 90% effective, the rate Pfizer touted for its product, 1 in 10 recipients would still be vulnerable. Right, so we're talking 90%. Pfizer, which was, let's see, I forget the exact numbers. It was right here. I thought it was. Oh, here we go. So Pfizer, the smallest group, by the way, 32 vaccine recipients. So all they need is 7 or less developing symptoms. 7 or less, right? So 7 or less is all they need to get 7, that, or to get 100% technically. So 1 in 10 recipients in regard to that, guys, I mean, that's an astronomical amount of people. And that's even efficacy, right? We're talking about, on top of all of that, even if it works, getting lots of horrible side effects. It says that means that at least in the short term, as population level immunity grows, people can't stop social distancing and throw away their masks. Ah, there you go. You realize that it says should, it doesn't say shouldn't, can't. You can't do it. You're not allowed to do that anymore. Welcome to the new normal. And do you think that's going to go away? Right? What happens if we don't reach population level immunity? Well, they already answered that. Then you got to keep distancing, wearing your masks, stay on lockdown. Numerous governments have already acknowledged this, but yet people that don't want to believe where this is going are continuing to lie to themselves. We won't reach, population level immunity because we've been taking the flu vaccine for how long? And that hasn't happened. Every year they push more vaccines and more flu vaccines and more flu vaccines. On top of that, half of the people in this country are saying they don't want it. So when we don't reach population level immunity, well, they won't let you stop doing these things. It's going to be your fault. I said that the day this started. It says Omer, who declined to comment on reports that he's being considered for a post in the new administration of Joe Biden. Oh, okay. So the guy telling you all this, he's going to be in Joe Biden's task force, it seems. Shocking. Called for the rollout of a robust messaging campaign based on the best scientific evidence about vaccine hesitancy and acceptance. What, you know what that translates to? Propaganda. A robust messaging campaign. So they're going to blast your phone messaging software or systems with scientific evidence, which is what they want it to be, right? I show you scientific studies about this or that, and it's fake news because they don't agree with it. It's funny how they get to pick and choose what studies are actual scientific studies, despite the fact that they were funded by the NIH, National Library of Medicine. You know, who cares? Fake news. So what that is a aggressive propaganda network to make sure that you think that these are safe no matter what. It says we need to communicate, and we need to communicate effectively, and we need to start planning for this now. Yeah, we know. We see it. Such broad-based outreach will be necessary in a country where, as of mid-October, only half of Americans want to get the COVID vaccine. So don't you realize what that means, ladies and gentlemen? You are the majority. You are the majority. Not left, not right, Americans. Individuals in this country, if we all actually see across party lines and realize that what we're being forced to do, we don't want, and this is actually a democracy, well, they can't force that on you. They can't scream public health and force something on you that is wildly unconstitutional. They can, they could, they're powerful. Trump's might is right. Who knows what happens? By the way, the same thing that every other administration does, Trump just says it out loud. But if we actually show them that we will not take it sitting down, do you realize what that shows the world? I'm not saying I've got all the answers of what might happen, but I'll tell you it's sure as hell better than just sitting back and letting it happen. It says the biggest tragedy would be if we have a safe and effective vaccine that people are hesitant to get. That's the biggest tragedy? How about if everybody dies? No. Not getting the vaccine, that's the biggest tragedy. Clearly. It says Pfizer and its partner, the German biotech company BioNTech, said Monday that their vaccine appears to protect 9 in 10 people from getting COVID-19, although they didn't release the underlying data. Sure. Pfizer's 90%. 9 in 10 people. Yeah, you guys, you guys are being manipulated. We're all being manipulated. But this is the worst part. Data from early trials of several COVID-19 vaccines suggest that consumers will need to be prepared for side effects that, while technically mild, could disrupt daily life. I just love that. Why would you need to say technically? You only see because you're going to go on to clearly state things that are not considered mild. That's why technically we categorize them as mild. The same reason they categorize a injectable chip in your arm for the Prefusa chip, they consider that minimally invasive, despite the fact that it's being injected inside of your arm. Not a joke. You know, the Prefusa chip. The Prefusa chip Hepburn on Operation Warp Speed is adamant about and working with. Or Moncef Salawi has been speaking about bioinjectable his whole career. Yeah, all fake news, right? Remember, Monsieur is the leader of Operation Warp Speed, or excuse me, the vaccine czar. I believe Perna is the leader of Operation Warp Speed. All these people have ties to AI and nano-injectable platforms, all these different things. But it says a senior Pfizer executive told the news outlet Stat that side effects from the company's vaccine appear to be comparable to those of standard adult vaccines. That's you mean the thing that they argue is fake news all the time? But see, it's okay to slip it out now because you're trying to convince us that this one's okay. So it's only as bad as the ones we pretend aren't bad all the time. That's it. But worse than those of the company's pneumonia vaccine, Prevnar, or typical flu shots. God, it's crazy. The two-dose Shingrix vaccine, for instance, which protects older adults against the virus that causes painful shingles, results in sore arms in 78% of recipients. Now that means you're getting sick, ladies and gentlemen, because that's what these ones are. These are vaccine scenarios. And muscle pain and fatigue in more than 40% of those who take it. Prevnar and common flu shots can cause injection pain, site pain, aches, fever. Quote, we're asking people to take a vaccine that's going to hurt. Take your medicine, ladies and gentlemen. Eat your vegetables. We know what's best for you. Regardless of whether you think they're even being honest, at what point did it stop being your choice? Persuading people who experience those symptoms to return in 3 to 4 weeks for a second dose? Yeah, and a second round of flu-like symptoms? Could be a tough sell. Yeah, you don't say. Now, what happens if you get that first round and then you don't come back? I'm sure you know what would happen. They've already shown you. There's clearly an agenda here that goes beyond your personal rights. How public health experts explain such effects is important. There's evidence that suggests that if you frame pain, get this, this is the same guy that's going to be on Biden's task force, possibly. There's evidence that suggests that if you frame pain, which means it doesn't have to be true, as a proxy of effectiveness, it's helpful. It's if it's hurting a little, it's working. Where have you heard that before? So he's just flat out telling you, we need to trick people into doing this because it's good for you. Or so that's the implication. The statement or the flat out on the sentence, we need to trick you into doing this because we want you to believe it's good for you. You know, just frame it as the pain working and, tell those dummies just to take what we tell them. A lot of folks don't have sick leave, right? So I love how they're talking about sick leave. A lot of our essential workers don't have health insurance. What about all the Americans that don't have a job or, money or food to feed their families? But we're talking about sick leave in a country that has half of its people unemployed. Yeah, cool. It's just weird the way that they're framing this. Because the point is they're telling you, you're going to be sick. You're going to be staying home. Making sure consumers know that a vaccine is likely to require two doses and that it could take a month for full effectiveness to kick in is also crucial. The Pfizer vaccine phase 3 trial, which enrolled nearly 44,000 people, started in late July. Participants received a second dose 21 days after the first. The reported 90% efficacy was measured 7 days after the second dose. But you notice how they list 44,000 people, except that it very clearly was not 44,000 people. Right? Like, let's be clear about the way that they're willingly misrepresenting that. 32 people, 7 or less developing symptoms, right? They're talking about phase 3. So we're talking about 164. Pfizer, 164 people. Right there. But it says they enrolled nearly 44,000. See how they play the word games? That's how many people were there. 43,000 and whatever get placebo, while 164 get infections. Well, only a small fraction of them are supposed to, or technically, 164 get, I guess exposed. Or get the vaccine, and then small percentage of them have negative side effects. Or excuse me, I'm just being convoluted with this whole thing. The bottom line is that 44,000 people did not take the vaccine. Most of them took the placebo. The 164 of them took the vaccine, and a small fraction of them need to be... I mean, it's just so frustrating to see how small of a percentage this is. And remember, 60% in the primary of 164, not 44,000. It says participants received a second dose 21 days after 90% efficacy was measured after the second dose of 164 people. I mean, do we not think that NBC knows that? No, because the point is that they've already decided that telling you that part of the truth may make you hesitant. And that's more important to lie to you for their truth. Look at that. Well, on top of that, coronavirus vaccine alone would not end the pandemic, according to the World Health Organization. So now we went from next summer, next winter, you know, maybe when you all take it, maybe if you all get immunity, but now they come out, you know what? Just never, just not going to happen. We need more than just this vaccine. So it's just funny how every time the goalpost moves and everybody screams that we're conspiracy theorists for pointing out that the thing we said when this started is literally happening now. The vaccine alone would not end the pandemic. It says World Health Organization Director Tedros Adhanom on Monday said that a coronavirus vaccine alone would not end the pandemic. Continued surveillance, testing, quarantining would need to be effectively controlled or needed to effectively control the crisis. So just forever ongoing surveillance, testing, quarantining, you know, that's your new normal. Since the beginning of COVID-19, we knew that a vaccine would be essential. How is that? How is that exactly? Since the beginning of the thing that we didn't ever know would be what it is? Right. So does he mean since December, since January, since September 2019? Probably not. He's talking about January, February, right? So right when this first started and was happening in China, wherever else, and they were talking about it since the beginning. That's what he said. They knew that a vaccine would be essential. Why? What if it just phased off and just dripped it away and nothing ever came of it? But apparently they knew somehow that a vaccine would be essential. You know, he could just be saying that. Or that could be a little bit of a Freudian, or I guess probably you can call it that, but just a slip. Letting that information out to say that, well, the vaccine right when this started was off. We all knew that was what we were focusing on. It says, but it's important to emphasize that a vaccine will complement the other tools we have, not replace them, which is like the diametric opposite of what all the media, all of the experts, everybody swore we just need to get a vaccine. We can go back to normal. Clearly not. Tedros said that we would also need to continue with surveillance, and for the second time, testing, isolating, caring for positive cases, tracing and quarantining contacts, engaging communities. That's your future, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, and I just wanted to point this out here. I shared this today. This is just the clip of the longer show I did before, but it was specifically about the thing I just keep referencing, the Forbes article and the Design to Succeed. Designed to fail, or yeah, designed to succeed. But this guy points this out. I find this to be humorous. I mean, it's kind of facetious, but just think about it. The survivability rate for COVID-19 is over 95%, which is, that's CDC, WHO. That's the truth. More than that, actually, but that's the truth. Is over 95% for the worst bracket. And you are saying that this vaccine is 90% effective? Now, by the way, I don't think that, just 95% in general, right? Or more. I think it's way more than that. It's like 99.8, something like that in general. But you're saying that the vaccine is 90% effective? So it's less effective than the body's natural immune system? He says, yeah, like I'm going to allow that into my body. Like, that's a really interesting thing to think about, right? So if most people can fight this off more than 95% and the vaccine's only 90, I'm confused about that, right? Isn't your body better at it for most people? Well, yes, it is. Well, just don't think too hard into it, though. Just do what you're told, because that's what we're supposed to do. But again, going back to the high wire, this is an excellent episode that I really hope you'll watch in its entirety. But he does this. He just shows this image, which is just incredible. COVID-19 vaccine efficacy study data. And now this is the same thing we were going over. Except I'll show you right here what he's pointing to. Well, actually, we'll just look at this first. Pfizer and BioNTech announced vaccine candidate against COVID-19 achieved success. This is the one they're talking about on November 9th. But even in the one they released, as it says right here, was found to be 90% effective in preventing COVID-19. And he also makes an interesting point that they differentiate between, you know, I mean, obviously SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, but in the way that they respond with the vaccine. And the point he makes in there, which is important to think about, and this actually speaks to the truth about the PCR test and about how you can actually be sick or not, is that ultimately they deem SARS-CoV-2 infection to be if you just simply are tested with a PCR test and you have it present in your body, but you don't have COVID-19 until you're showing symptoms and you are actually sick. Or I would argue, I guess, I don't know how the asymptomatic part plays into that, but that's the point. And so you can clearly see a differentiation in the minds of even the people that are telling us how to think, that if you only have a little bit of this virus, you're not even technically sick with COVID-19 yet. But of course, it doesn't matter. You get a PCR test positive, well, you're quarantined. You got to wear a mask. You got to go inside. Like, that's where we are. But even 90% effective, here's what it says, just like we were telling you. Analysis evaluated 94 cases. That's it. 94. So study enrolled 43,538 people. 42% having diverse backgrounds, whatever, and no serious safety concerns have been observed. Safety additional efficacy data continue to be collected. So 43,000 people in only 94 cases. That's what he's showing you here about how stupid that is. And he makes a joking point that they tried to do this graph on a computer and the computer wouldn't register. It was going 90, that's zero. So it's 100%. Like, no, they wanted to see how small the line was for 94. That is the amount of people being tested out of the remaining trial participants. And they want you to think that if only some of those people within the vaccine scenario come down with, you know, get sick, only a few of them, meaning that they argue that's a success, that that's 90% of the entire trial of 43,000 people. I've never seen something so willfully dishonest in my life. I shouldn't say that. Every damn day I talk about how, but it's just, the point is how obviously willfully dishonest that is. And as he points out, it's interestingly 0.2% in regard to how actually effective it is in regard to how many people they actually tested. Interesting how 0.2 is also the death rate, infection fatality rate of this, of what we're dealing with. Interesting. Maybe it's because, maybe that's an accidental release. You know, I don't want to read into it, but bottom line, you are being lied to about how effective this is. And it's obviously, I mean, remember, we talked about how the Pfizer CEO sold 64% of his stock. The day after they made this announcement? Doesn't that show you something, that he knows this is being misrepresented? It should. But it says down here, this is what Dell pointed out. The study will evaluate the potential for the vaccine candidate to provide protection against COVID-19 in those who have had prior exposure to SARS-CoV-2, meaning just tested with a PCR test and having some present, but not actually being sick with the illness, as well as vaccine prevention against severe COVID-19 disease. Right? So they're claiming it's 90% effective and they have yet to test whether or not it protects you against the things that they're making the vaccine for. What it says. End of the day, take your time to watch this show. Dell's been doing an excellent job here. As far as I can tell, he's always been doing an excellent job fighting for the truth. It's just an unpopular truth that people don't want to hear. But today, people are waking up, even to these truths that have been difficult to sell. But on top of this, to end the discussion, because it's the same one I've been having for a while now, so I don't want to continue to push into it too much, as I probably spent an hour doing it, but this is constant, and you're being lied to about the vaccine efficacy, about how safe it is, about what it actually is, about informed consent, about everything. But now that they are telling you that it's not going to work and admitting to you that it's, it'll be way past that. And it's not just the vaccine. It's going to go on until summer. It's going to be on until winter. It's way past what we keep telling you it is. Well, now they're going, well, yeah, we know, but it's Swiss cheese model. This is just about the dumbest thing I can ever. They're literally saying that it's like stacking Swiss cheese on top of each other. One piece isn't going to block it. It's not going to be effective. But if you stack enough of them, well, I would love it. You know why that's the dumbest analogy for someone that's actually worked in a kitchen that's actually stacked Swiss cheese? It usually ends up with holes anyway. It's pieces that go through. So it's just a dumb analogy on its face for what they're trying to argue. But the point being is that they're saying that vaccines by itself won't work. Masks by itself won't work. You need to do all of these things simultaneously. So it boils down to do what you're told. No, it's not going to go back to normal until we tell you it will. So do everything we're telling you, and you need to do all of them simultaneously, or it won't actually work. And if it ends up not working and we don't get to go back to normal, it's your fault because you didn't do what you were told. It says, in hopeful news this week, Pfizer and its partner BioNTech released interim results from an ongoing trial of their candidate coronavirus vaccine. The study involved 43,538 volunteers who were randomly assigned either the vaccine or a placebo. The rates of infection were small for both groups, but those who got the placebo were substantially more likely to get COVID-19, 85 or more cases. Those who got the treatment, just 9 cases or fewer. Again, the lie, the very willful misrepresentation that 43,000 people were potentially getting the vaccine, when in reality, It was, as I forget once again, what, 34? Seven people total? 32, with seven or less developing symptoms. Or 164 at 60% efficacy in its primary. Yeah, but just go ahead and stack it up. Don't think too hard about it. And of course, here is more interesting revelations coming from Tom Fitton. Biden plans to send federal officials to trace your activities if you test positive for coronavirus. Will delay vaccines to ensure they are safe? As Kamala says, the Biden administration will get COVID-19 under control by listening to experts. You mean only the ones you want to, though, right? Because I've shown you a lot of experts that then get censored for talking to them. And I'm talking people that are obviously experts. 40, 50 years in the field. No, I mean, there's Nobel laureates out there, entire governments talking about this, but only the experts they agree with. Implementing nationwide testing and tracing. Nationwide testing and tracing. Tracing. Why would you need to trace nationwide? And ensuring vaccines are safe and free for all. Of course, they say free when what they really mean is you'll pay for it in your taxes. But yeah, free. It's all free. Sickening. The illusion they're painting for all this. But this brings us to the idea of what I've mentioned a few times. Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights. This is the PDF that you can look at for yourself. I want to go over a few points in this. First of all, I want to make people to understand this. UNESCO, who is the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, part of the UN, is discussing Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights. Now it says, since the 1970s, the field of bioethics has grown considerably. While it is true that bioethics today includes medical ethics issues, its originality lies in the fact that it goes much further than the various professional codes of ethics concerned. It entails reflection on societal changes and even on global balances brought about by scientific and technological developments. The actual opposite of what they're taking into consideration today. Right. They want what they want, and they argue what they want is best for everybody. So who cares what anybody says? Who cares what Americans want? Because this is best for you, and we don't care what you want. The balance of these things and society is the last thing they're thinking about, despite the fact that they're framing it as rebuilding society, but in ways that benefits them and the power structure. And of course, people that believe that owning nothing and existing within a society where the government controls every aspect of your life is somehow better. Sure, there are people that actually think that, but not the majority. The balance is the last thing they're considering. To their already difficult question posed by life scientists, how far can we go? Again, the last thing they're actually asking. Other queries must be added concerning the relationship between ethics, science, and freedom. Adopted by UNESCO's General Conference on October 19th, 2005. Okay? Signed by, unanimously. After 2 years of intense work, the member states adopted unanimously the Universal Declaration of Bioethics and Human Rights, meaning that Israel signed it, the United States signed it, everybody in the UN, the member states signed this, unanimously agreeing to what we're about to go over. So as we go through this, ask yourself, if they signed this and we go over the parts they're violating, are they doing so because they think it's best for you? Are they allowed to make that decision? And why isn't the rest of the world standing up and saying, well, look, you're doing that thing and it's completely violating the bioethics and human rights? Well, in first point, because seemingly more than half the world is doing so, which needs to make you begin to think that there's such quite a larger thing going on than many realize. But jumping down to the points here, well, I think there were, let me just kind of flash through, conscious of the unique capacity of human rights to reflect upon their own existence and their environment, to perceive injustice, to avoid danger, to assume responsibility, to seek cooperation, and to exhibit moral sense that gives expression to ethic principles. I mean, even just as you go through, it just seems clear that these things are not human rights. The idea, it's about what they want and what they believe is best for you. So we're being told. Reflecting on the rapid developments in science technology, which increasingly affect our understanding of life and life itself, resulting in a strong demand for a global response to the ethical implications of such developments, right? Does anybody believe out there that they're considering the ethical implications of the genetically modifying things they're testing on humanity? Sure, they scream that it's for your best interest because you're in danger, but Are they considering the ethical implications of pushing that in when there are other actions that could have been taken? Yeah, well, I'm just going to skip down to the actual points. I think there was some stuff in here, but I don't want to take too long, but I do want to read these points and go through all of them. General provisions, Article 1, scope. The declaration addresses ethical issues related to medicine, life sciences, and associated technologies as applied to human beings, taking into account their social, legal, and environmental dimensions. The declaration is addressed to states as appropriate and relevant. It also provides guidance to decisions or practices of individuals, groups, communities, institutions, corporations, public and private. Boilerplate. Told you. Article 2. The aims of this declaration are to provide a framework of principles and procedures to guide states in the formulation of their legislation, policies, and other instruments in the fields of bioethics, to guide actions, individuals, groups, communities, to promote respect for human dignity and protect human rights. I mean, right off the bat, to force someone to take something that they do not want to take, to inject somebody's body with chemicals that they do not agree to, can we just automatically out the gate agree that that violates their human rights? Regardless of how safe or smart you think it is for the society? That point comes in a minute. By ensuring respect for human life, being a human, life of human beings, the fundamental freedoms consistent with international human rights law. Right there. What they're doing is not consistent with international human rights law. So a lot of the U.S. allies are not right now. To recognize the importance of freedom of scientific research and the benefits derived from science, scientific and technological developments, while stressing the need for such research and developments to occur within the framework of ethical principles set out by this declaration to respect human dignity, rights, and freedoms. Okay, I think that was the first part here. Okay, principles. Now this is where it gets important, especially when we get down to consent. Human dignity, human rights. Human dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms are to be fully respected. Remember, the U.S. government already signed this back in 2005. The interest, and this is, and well, I should have, in case it wasn't clear, I felt like it was, but this, what this is about in general is, as it says, a universal declaration in regard to the ethical practices in regard to sciences and research that are on the cutting edge. And whether, like, for instance, with biomanipulation and biotesting, such as the BSO4 labs that are creating bioweapons under the guise of making vaccines, right? That's unethical. What they're doing is putting people at risk. And it's in, right, in this document, it points out why it is. But that's what it's talking about. So the broader discussion of not just vaccines, but anything. New technologies, new research, and the ethical aspects of how it should go forward, and these principles that you have to follow, which they already agreed to. Now it says the interest of and welfare of the individual. This is so incredibly important right here. And in fact, this is probably the most important part of this. This is Article 3, human dignity and human rights. The interest and welfare of the individual should have priority over the sole interest of science or society. Does that not directly counter the entire narrative that we're hearing? Right? I mean, the whole point is that society trumps the needs of the individual. Alan Dershowitz made this argument, you know, the argument that there's a precedent in the courts back from what, 1918 or whatever it was, or before or after that, despite the fact that that was repugnant to the Constitution when it was decided, which means it's null and void as the Constitution states before that, regardless. The interest and welfare of you as an individual have priority over the sole interest of science or society. So whether it's the interest of developing science or saving society, you, your individual rights and your freedoms have priority. The U.S. government signed this. So right now, knowing that they're forcing you to do things against your will, to force you to lock down or wear a mask, even though you're not sick, right? Quarantining the healthy, which has never been done. That is literally violating this that they've already signed. Now we're just getting started. Article 4, benefit and harm. In applying and advocating scientific knowledge, medical practice and associated technologies, direct and indirect benefits to patients, research participants, and other affected individuals should be maximized, and any possible harm to such individuals should be minimized. Individuals should be maximized in regard to research. Is that happening now? Well, no, because they're saying you're in danger, so we don't need to do those things. And we're going to give immunity to the company making them because they're doing this for your safety, even though they're skipping the safety trials. Every time I say that, it's so stupid that I can't believe people buy this stuff. But benefit and harm. You don't get to say pandemic, we're in danger, so skip all the safety things. Nope, they already signed this, and this is a universal UN worldwide agreement that they agreed to. Which, what does that mean? They violate UN mandates and resolutions and agreements every 10 seconds, as far as I can tell. But nonetheless, the point is that they signed this and they're violating it. So it just gives you more legal standing as an individual if you find yourself going up in a legal battle, fighting for not wearing a mask or for locking down or for being forced a vaccine, which is happening all more places around the world right now than make me comfortable. Not, truthfully, not a single one makes me comfortable, but there's so many examples of this right now where they're openly pushing for it. Denmark was one where it got shot down. Good news. But it's very clear that the government was saying, we want to be able to force you to take this vaccine. And yet that's being called fake news. The simple idea that anyone out there is trying to make it mandatory is just, that's crazy conspiracy theory. Because why? It causes vaccine hesitancy. We don't want you to think that. So it's okay for us to lie about that, even if it's true. Because it's for your best interest. Journalism. But it says autonomy, individual responsibility, the autonomy of persons to make decisions. As in you. While taking responsibility for those decisions and respecting the autonomy of others is to be respected. While respecting the autonomy of others, meaning you have a choice. For persons who are not capable of exercising autonomy, say somebody who is in a coma, somebody who can't speak, somebody who is under the care of somebody else, special measures are to be taken to protect their rights and interests. Meaning you can't just force them to do it because it's in everyone's best interest. The autonomy of our individual choices take precedent, as again, as a reference right here, the interest of the welfare and the individual take priority over society. It says, and this is the most, well, second most important part, consent. Any preventative, diagnostic, and therapeutic medical intervention is only to be carried out with prior, free, and informed consent of the person concerned, based on adequate information. Now, funny how they're freaking out on NBC over here about how we need to hurry and get them the information before it's too late, because as it says right here, there's a tight time frame to make sure they understand that it's, because they're talking about informed consent. So you don't get to squeeze in a tight time frame and rush it. That's not informed consent. You don't get to dictate the time frame. I am the person who is possibly getting injected. I am the individual who has the right to come to that the consent. I have the right to say, no, I don't want it because I don't feel informed on it. I don't feel I fully understand the information because you're flat out lying to us about the efficacy and how many people are being tested and whether placebos are being used with saline solution or meningitis vaccines or whether you're testing with PCR. I mean, they're lying and lying on top of lies on top of lies. And it's straight up telling you that you have the right. It says the consent should, where appropriate, be expressed and may be withdrawn by the person concerned at any time for any reason without disadvantage or prejudice. So societal financial exclusion violates this mandate or agreement. You as an individual have the right, according to international law, to withdraw your consent to take any of these things for any reason, at any time, without disadvantage or prejudice, meaning you can't then be turned away from flying on an airplane, or you can't be turned away from a restaurant, or you can't be marked down on your social credit score. Yet they will do it, and it already is happening. I'm speechless every time I go through this, because it's just so clear that they're violating almost every single part of this, and the whole thing is specifically about ethics. It is about the ethics of bio research and vaccines and science, and they're violating the ethics and your human rights. I hope this is very clear. You need to be able to understand that you can say no. And if they try to attack you for it or call you a conspiracy theorist or claim that you're going to be locked down or controlled or quarantined or whatever, penalized in any way, they are violating international law. Or, you know, to call this flat out international law is a bit of a stretch, but we're talking about a universal declaration that was agreed upon by the United States. So at the very least, it makes them liars. It says scientific research should only be carried out with the prior, free, express, and informed consent of the person concerned. So again, you have a right to say, I feel uninformed. I have every right to do so. The information should be adequate, provided in a comprehensible form, and should include modalities for withdrawal of consent. None of these things are being considered. that as they rush in information without telling everybody and act like that's informed consent. None of this makes sense. It says consent, again, it says may be withdrawn by the person concerned at any time and for any reason without any disadvantage or prejudice. First paragraph. You have the right to say no at any time for any reason without disadvantage or prejudice. Exceptions to this principle should be made only in accordance with the ethical and legal standards adopted by the states. Right. So this is where you can get Dershowitz's argument, except the fact that we know that anything that violates the Constitution is null and void. So they cannot argue that they have the right to force you because society's benefit, because they list right up here that you have the your priority is over the or society's priority, and there's no law that states that's the case, right? So, boom. It's very clear. This is the reason these things work. It says, consistent with the principles and provisions set out in the Declaration. So, regardless, the point is, even if you go with the first part, what they're saying or what they're doing is simply not consistent with the principles and provisions in the Declaration. So, right there, off the table. In particular, Article 27. International human rights law. We'll get to these in a second. I probably will skip through these. I've taken way too long on these, but these were the important ones. And I went real fast over this the last time. In appropriate cases of research carried out on a group of persons or a community, additional agreement of the legal representatives of the group or community concerned may be sought. I mean, these are like, there's extra layers of kind of concern of consent. And it's incredible how willing they are to just trash all of this. Because they're rebuilding everything, didn't you know? In no case should a collective community agreement or the consent of a community leader or other authority substitute for an individual's informed consent. That could not be more clear how your informed consent and your ability to withdraw it is constant, never changing. Persons without the, and this basically just makes the case that if you don't have the ability to consent, that it's the same concept of before in accordance with law and this resolution and the declaration. That you basically need to have the people that are in charge of them need to basically give their consent. That's the point. And then it reasserts the same ideas. The research should be carried out for their direct benefit and the same ideas. Respect for human vulnerability and personal integrity, right? So we know that there's people that are immunocompromised that won't be able to take the vaccine anyway. We know there are people that are all over the place that are being adversely affected by this, but it's not even their choice. And they don't consider these people. In applying, and they just make the argument that it's better for society, which, by the way, this declaration clearly states is not able to trump your personal rights. In applying and advancing scientific knowledge, medical practice, and associated technologies, human vulnerability should be taken into account. Individuals and groups of special vulnerability should be protected, and the personal integrity of such individuals respected. Now, the way I feel that is take that as vulnerability, like people who like are immunocompromised in regard or people who are adversely affected by the research or the science they're conducting and on and on and on. There's any way vulnerability is a pretty broad concept. I do not actually think that that's talking about social justice concepts. Actually, there's a part of that right down here in the next one, but that's how that kind of feels. But I actually believe they're talking about individuals that, let's say, are adversely affected by what's in a vaccine or so on. It says privacy and confidentiality. The privacy of the persons concerned, so think contact tracing, which is wildly, I mean, your privacy has been non-existent in this country since the Patriot Act, probably long before. And the confidentiality of the personal information should be respected. That's not happening. They'll tell you your neighbor won't get to see it, but they obviously need to see all your information because they're keeping you safe and they need to know whether you're sick or whether the secondary vaccine is causing an effect or whether your neighbors are affected, right? That's pharmacovigilance, contact tracing, everybody. To the greatest extent possible, such information should not be used or disclosed for purposes other than those for which it was collected or consented to, such as, you know, like the UK government selling your information from contact tracing to marketing firms, even though they told you it wouldn't happen, you know, just like that. So the UK also violating this, obviously. Consistent with international law, you know, none of these, they're violating things left and right. They get into equity, justice, and equality, and equity, just basically saying the equality of all human beings and dignity and rights respected. It says non-discrimination and non-stigmatization. No individual or group should be discriminated against or stigmatized on any grounds. Now, the way I take this, and this could apply in so many ways, because remember, this was in 2005, this was written, no individual or group. So say people that they decide are anti-vaxxers. Well, they're already violating that. And first of all, realize that anti-vaxxers, that they name it, is just anybody who's openly hesitant about this very dangerous vaccine. I mean, there are doctors who are openly pro-vaccine who are speaking out about this because there's obvious reasons to be concerned, and they're being labeled the anti-vaccine. Even though they're outspoken about the quality, the necessity and benefits of vaccines, because they say this one thing, suddenly they're anti-vax. That's because that's how dishonest and minimizing, reductive these ridiculous mainstream people are. So they're labeling everybody anti-vax. That becomes a group that's being discriminated against or stigmatized. It says on any grounds in violation of human dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms. Of course, that just doesn't matter. They don't care about your freedoms. It's never been something they care about. Respect for cultural diversity and pluralism. Solidarity and cooperation. Social responsibility and health. The promotion of health and social development for their people is a central purpose of governments that all sectors of society share. Taking into account that the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of health is one of the fundamental rights of every human being, except that we have a sick care system that ultimately maintains your sickness instead of actually making you healthy. Which we all secretly know that. I mean, it's almost not even secret. That's why there's no money in curing things. When's the last time anything was cured? Because they want to just treat you forever. I mean, guys, it's not even secret. It's just basic stuff. Now, these apply to kind of different scenarios, access to water and so on, which, by the way, these are governments violating this in many other ways around the world in regard to foreign policy and so on. But that's another just conversation. Sharing of benefits. This is talking about, you know, it's interesting. The U.S. government has been odd in the way that they tried to like buy other people's vaccines or tried to make sure that it was only for the United States if they did. So it seems to violate that in its own right. Protecting future generations, the impact of life sciences on future generations, including on their genetic constitution, should be given due regard. Has anybody had that conversation? Have you even heard them discuss the possibility of genetic changes? Of course not, because that would cause vaccine hesitancy, despite how true it is. So they just ignore it, despite the fact that they're currently violating that in regard to informed consent, in regard to making sure that the impact of on life sciences and future generations by a vaccine that they don't know what will happen long term, that should be considered. But they're not. It's violating this compact and like every other aspect we've talked about. Protection of the environment. But like, let's pretend like in any way that's even happening in regard to the fact that the U.S. military, you know, regardless of whether a Democrat or Republican is in the office, in the, you know, the presidency, is always the world's most prolific polluter. That's not a secret. Easy to look up. The U.S. military pollutes more than any other entity on the planet. But yet then we fight about climate change and all these different things, and except we just let it keep happening. If you really cared about that, of course, they argue that, well, because we're spreading freedom and democracy as we literally steal those things every step we take. Yeah, but just shut up about it. Just take our word for it. They're not doing any of those things. And even in regard to like biodiversity, I mean, these are all biosphere, biodiversity. It says due regards to be given to the interconnection between human beings and other life forms of life, you know, such as how when like the Navy tests their sonar devices in the ocean and kills dolphins and whales and all these things, which is, you may not be aware of that actually. I've written articles about it. Unbelievable. It happens constantly. It happens a lot. They test these things. They kill a lot of animals. There's an acceptable amount of death. You can look it up on the Navy's, I think it's on one of their websites, in regard to their testing. I've covered it before. Is that respect of the interconnection between human beings and other forms of life? Obviously not. They do not care about these things. The importance of appropriate access to the utilization of biological and genetic resources. To respect for traditional knowledge and the role of human beings in the protection of the environment, the biosphere, and biodiversity. Decision-making addressing bioethical issues. Professionalism, honesty, integrity, and transparency. You know, you realize that Operation Warp Speed is just about the least transparent health agenda that we've ever seen in this country. They are not allowing even the FDA to sit at the table. Whitney and I already went over this. Added to the list of things they're breaking here. Now it says ethics committees, risk assessment. Let's just jump to the last part here. Those are the main points that I wanted to see. And I hope, you know, I really want these to be remembered. The fact that you have the right to remove your consent. You have the right to, your rights have precedent over, or the, you know, what's the word they use? They're more important than society as a whole. They take precedent. But Article 27, limitations on the applications of the principles. If the application of the principles of this declaration is to be limited, it should be by law, including laws in the interest of public safety, which seems to be the opposite, or at least that's what they're using to pretend they're doing it, even though what they're doing is literally ignoring safety. It's crazy. For the investigation, detection, and prosecution of criminal offenses. Ah, I forgot this thing refreshes itself. It's weird. For the protection of public health, or for the protection of the rights and freedoms of others. Any such law needs to be consistent with international human rights law, which, by the way, it's not. So you see where we're going here, guys? Do you understand how important this is in regard to why those things aren't being regarded and that the U.S. would sign it and just not care? But I mean, but let's be clear here, guys. I'm talking about the U.S. government because that's where I am and that's where I'm concerned about the direction, but we're talking about the world in general. The U.N. here, guys. Every part of the U.N. All the other people that are involved in the United Nations, right? You could name all the U.S. people that you don't like as well, right? The point is that they're all violating this stuff. That's why I begin to, we need to begin to realize that there's a larger agenda taking place around the world. It's not just the U.S., just the U.K., just Israel, just Saudi Arabia. There's a larger thing happening right now. It shows you how reaching and controlling this whole thing really is, whatever you want to call that. Now, moving on to the vaccine discussion and the resistance to it, I wanted to point this out because I know this has already changed. Just so you know, right off the bat, apparently this has already been reversed because of the protests. But in Denmark, it says 9 days. Now, realize nobody talked about this other than independent media. 9 days of protests? Where was the mainstream? Do they not care about this? Apparently not. They just realize how quickly they will report on protests that they want you to see, where people are doing violent things, but never will, which, if they are, no longer becomes a protest. In this case, they don't want you to see this because it's honest, genuine, organic protests against exactly the thing that they don't want you to protest. 9 days of protest over the new law. It's a new law in Denmark that would be able to define groups of people who must be vaccinated. People who refuse the above can be coerced through physical detainment with police allowed to assist. That's crazy. See, you can see this says explained. What is Denmark's proposed epidemic law and why is it being criticized? I just had this one part highlighted. It's just incredible. It says some areas in the proposed law that have raised eyebrows. People infected with dangerous disease can be forcibly given medical examination, hospitalized, treated, and placed in isolation. So you can be forced to take a vaccine if this law were to pass. The Danish Health Authority would be able to define groups of people who must be vaccinated in order to contain and eliminate dangerous disease. People who refuse the above can, in some situations, be coerced through physical detainment with the police allowed to assist. This is not conspiracy theory. And as I said, I guess I don't have it up. But as I say, in general, the point was, to all those people that are saying this is all conspiracy theory, right? I mean, if this is very clearly what the government here is trying to accomplish. They want to be able to force you to take the vaccine. But I thought that was fake news. The point is not that it's guaranteed to happen, not that it's happening everywhere, but it's clear that plenty of governments, including in the United States, because plenty of Congress, of newspapers and congressmen have said this, that they want this to be mandated. So why then is it considered fake news to even discuss that topic? You know the answer. It's never been more clear in my entire life. But here's the good news. As she points out, Denmark has thrown the epidemic law in the bin, thrown it in the garbage can, a week-long fight with pots and pans, because she's saying you can show them here banging their pots and pans when they're cheering, wherever it was, right there. But this is because people protested. This is because people stepped up and said, we will not accept this. That's why this is such an important point. We can make a difference, ladies and gentlemen, if we just see past our broken two-party illusion. Derek Brose wrote this. It's important to recognize that despite the silence from corporate media, there have been massive anti-lockdown protests in Canada, Italy, Germany, Spain, Denmark, and numerous other places that I'm sure you are, that are being ignored. There are not right-wing, these are not right-wing extremists or simply conspiracy theorists. These are a mix of people who are concerned with the economic impact of lockdowns, questioning the safety of masks and the necessity of lockdowns. It's a balance of people who are sick of the overzealous authoritarian response from governments around the world. Wherever you live on the planet, localize, organize, and push back where you can. Support businesses that find ways not to comply and talk to family and friends as much as possible. The fight happens in many ways. We are either going to be swept up in this game a second time, or we are going to find ways to push back, opt out of their systems, and build something better. What do you choose? Good way to ask that. But at the end of the day, we as individuals, when coming together, are so incredibly powerful that it scares the hell out of them. And that is why they make sure to divide us at every possible turn. Do you not see what can happen if people actually come out in protest? If people actually come out like this? Peacefully protesting. Making a ruckus, yeah. Look how many people that is, right? You're not going to be ignored. We are not going to stop, and we're going to sit here, and we're not going to react. We're not going to violent. We're just going to protest until you stop. And this is 9 days straight. And you get people like me talking about it. You get people all over the world pointing out that they're resisting this, and suddenly it pulls back. Now, whether that was the point all along, which does happen, right? They kind of set the tone. They roll it out here and make it way overzealous. And so you go, no, push it back. And then they come back a little later somewhere else with a small, like a reduced version of it. So you go, well, that's a little better. And eventually you just get it anyway because they keep forcing it in until it passes, and then you just kind of accept it. That's classic government manipulation. But the real takeaway, guys, is you, as the individual listening right there, you watching the show, you have the power to change these things if you just get past the division tactics they're using on all of us. It's a powerful thing to realize that we can make a difference if we just see past that. But that's exactly why they're doing things like this. Stop anti-vaccination fake news online with a new law, says Lay. This is in the exact, well, it's Denmark, but we're talking about the UK in a lot of examples here. And this is what we're talking about. They're trying to pass laws right now that say that what they deem to be fake news. Realize that they've called my coverage fake news when I'm literally posting National Institute of Health science studies. That's it. Or going over lists and lists of mainstream articles of years ago and pointing out things that they're talking about that don't exist today. And that gets censored. Or discussions of Operation Warp Speed and how, look at the vaccines and how they're not effective the way they say they are based off their information, censored. Because that's fake news to them, despite it being real and factual and sourced. You know, the exact opposite of what mainstream media does today. It's incredible, but that's where it's going, guys. And you know, I actually forgot about this, but I keep wanting to squeeze this in somewhere because this is just horrifying. I'm going to keep looking into this more, but this is something that I keep seeing. There's a video that I had up that I didn't remember to bring up today from a lady, I believe in the UK, saying this, that her friend told her that her baby was separated from her birth and she still has no access to it. Yeah, it was just a video and unconfirmed, but here are examples of exactly that and why this is exactly happening. They separated me from my baby. Hospitals are keeping newborns from their parents over coronavirus fears. This is just horrifying. Realize, I mean, even here, it talks about like you can get a test or you not get a test, but if you don't get a test, we're gonna basically consider that they might be sick and they're gonna test the baby. I mean, gosh, this is just disgusting. Why? Because they're telling you you're in danger. Now, ask whether or not that's something that is, you know, in regard, I mean, first of all, realize how traumatizing that is for a baby in the most important time that it needs to be with the mother. The most critical time in the life of the baby is the time when it needs to connect and bond with the mother after it's born. And you're going to pull them away. And then what? Jam something up its nose, take its DNA, make sure you can get your claim, you know, and then get a PCR test that probably is going to say that they're sick. And then you're going to quarantine the baby for 14 weeks. I mean, it's just incredible how crazy this is. None of this, by the way, none of this is allowable under the Universal Declaration of Bioethics and Human Rights. None of it. But who cares about those things, right? Because it's only what we say is the truth. But then that doesn't make any sense when Justin Trudeau comes out and literally outlines exactly what we've been saying is happening and being censored for saying. Great Reset trends on Twitter after Trudeau's speech on COVID-19 hints it's not just a conspiracy theory. Like, this is just ridiculous. As you can listen to it yourself right here. And I've got two examples of this. But as I said, remember when the idea that this whole thing was being used to justify technocratic changes, you know, was just a conspiracy theory, COVID clown world? Now, to be very clear here, the simple argument that COVID, whether fake, created, or organic, regardless, the idea that that thing is being used after the fact or before to justify these changes, that simple idea was called fake news and censored. Like, even if you say, look, yeah, it happened naturally and they're fighting it, but now they're using it to roll out this agenda they've had on the books for years. We were attacked for that. And just like, here's a, add this to the list of 1,000 examples since this started where we say something, they laugh and say fake news, and then a week later it turned out to be true. Like, we're in like a hyper situation where conspiracy theories are being like regularly proved to be, it's crazy. Whereas before you'd get like, oh, chemtrails are proven to be right. Or, oh, you know, all these down the line year after year, this is happening week by week. And here we are. Listen to what he says. Now, don't, in regard to what this guy has to say about it, that's irrelevant. What he's saying in this is what's important. And the fact that he's literally outlining how we need to use where we are to do the things that we have told you they were trying to accomplish. And I still get called conspiracy theorists, even as I say this. You should see the comments under this tweet. Oh, you're so crazy. It's like, how are you? You must be out of your mind. He literally just said it.
Building back better means giving support to the most vulnerable.
Building back better, by the way, is the, you know, the Biden campaign thing, but it's also the World Economic Reset, or the world. Yeah, that's perfect. World Economic Forum, the Great Reset. Did you miss that, by the way, guys? That Biden's campaign slogan was the World Economic Forum idea. Shocking, right?
Maintaining our momentum on reaching the 2030 agenda for sustainable development.
Reaching the 2030 agenda. So wait a minute. How did the 2030 agenda suddenly get swept in with COVID-19? Because you know what? They have literally nothing to do with each other. Except what he's just saying is, well, we're in this position. Coincidentally enough, you know what? We just happen to be here. So what do you know? We should use this thing that we've always been trying to push on you guys that you've been very reluctant to do. Because now it's worth doing.
And the SDGs. Canada is here to listen and to help. This pandemic has provided an opportunity.
An opportunity. The pandemic has provided an opportunity. I thought that was fake news.
For a reset.
Fake news.
This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems.
Our pre-pandemic levels. I mean, for every one of those people in the chat that are not in the chat of the show, in the comments beneath this tweet, I don't even know if they actually listened to what he said. He literally just said so they're saying things that we were trying to do before that we couldn't do are now able to be driven in. It's an opportunity to build back better. Why do we need to be built back at all? Oh, that's right. Because you guys destroyed our economy, our jobs, and our livelihood. Not COVID-19. Your unjustifiable lockdowns did that. But now we're building back because you did that. So can we blame you? No, it's COVID-19. You following?
That actually address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change.
So climate change, poverty, and inequality are COVID-19? Right? I mean, there's nothing there to connect these things. They're just simply saying, because we're in this bad way, let's just use this to take advantage of these things and rebuild all of this. But let me ask you this. In the process of doing that, doesn't that mean you're taking away resources, time, and effort from helping the people that you already just destroyed? Yes, it does. But what you essentially did was you brought everyone down to this very basic level, and now you can be like, we're going to build you all back up together. Like, that wasn't the point. If you're going to be helping build back everything better, all these people that are expecting to go back to normal the moment you get a vaccine are in for a shock. And here's another one. Now, this next one is actually shared by Max Bernier, who was running. I'm not as up on Canadian politics. I forget the party he was running with. I don't want to misquote it for all my Canadian viewers out there. But that's what it is right there. Hold on. Leader of the People's Party. People's Party of Canada. There it is, the PPC. So I actually shared something with him a while back. Anyway, the point is that he was running for this, and he was one of the only people out there that was kind of going against the grain, and obviously he didn't win. But here he is pointing this out. Another politician saying that he's quoting what Justin Trudeau is saying. The pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. Reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges, investing more in international development. And he just says, open your eyes. Globalism is not a conspiracy theory. It's happening. Now, you can disagree whether it's globalism or, you know, Justin Trudeau's government trying to take power, whatever you want to call it. At the end of the day, this is clearly not about COVID-19. And that used to be a conspiracy theory. And in fact, it still is. They'll still call it a conspiracy theory right now. But listen to this one too.
Canada believes that a strong, coordinated response across the world and across sectors is essential. This pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change. Last week, our government committed to investing more in international development while supporting developing countries on their economic recoveries and resilience.
So we're talking about, he's talking about, in regard to Canada, spending more money on international investment, more money on other countries' needs, while your country is in a bad way, while people are unemployed, while people have lost their jobs, while people have, you know, because of lockdowns and control and all of this stuff. And they're openly saying, but yeah, let's just go ahead and already use this money to help other people because of building back better, whatever. I mean, this, you have a responsibility to your people. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try to help where we can, but at one, it shouldn't be the obligation of everybody. It should be a choice made by individuals, because that's what charity actually is. Because what you're actually doing is not even really charity. It's covert manipulation and control around the world is what it ultimately boils down to. Do you think the U.S. government liberated Iraq, Syria, or Afghanistan, or Bolivia? I mean, these places are chaotic right now. Look at Libya, right? That's what we're going to spend more money to continue to influence the direction of these countries that we want to control. That's what that means. I just don't know how this can be much more clear.
And on that note, today, I can announce that Canada will invest $400 million more in humanitarian and development funding, which will go directly to trusted partners on the ground fighting COVID-19. Our government is committed to investing even more.
So now they're spending more money around the world, but they're saying it's for COVID-19. I see. But it's about building back better in regard to things that have nothing to do with COVID-19. Like, that's perfectly clear.
In the years to come. In addition, we will continue to advocate for extending the debt service suspension initiative. We will also work on ensuring the special needs of small island developing states and other vulnerable countries are taken into account. Building back better means getting support to the most vulnerable while maintaining our momentum on reaching the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and the SDGs. Canada is here to listen and to help. Canada believes...
But we're conspiracy theorists, though, right? We're crazy. And this last one is just going to put you on a spin. This is just incredible to me. So right off the bat, Foreign Affairs, right? This is the magazine, U.S. Foreign Policy and International Affairs, since 1922. Almost 800,000 people. In the past, it sometimes has taken a dramatic shock. You know, Pearl Harbor, Sputnik, 9/11. To wake up the United States to a new national security threat and prompt a major pivot. Guess what? The COVID-19 crisis should do the same, argues Hillary Clinton. No joke. So here's Hillary Clinton at the perfect time stepping in and saying, yeah, you know, like Pearl Harbor and 9/11, this COVID-19 thing might be exactly that. Sort of how Trump said we need a new 9/11-like event to bring the country together. Or sort of like PNAC said we need a new Pearl Harbor-like event to bring the country together. Here's Clinton saying, well, COVID is that thing. And so funny how Pearl Harbor and 9/11 were all, you know, manipulated events that totally let you just straight up call them false flags. And here we are. Saying, yep. And by the way, remember the DHS individual saying that we see a new 9/11 building, we don't want to stop it, and all the discussions of ground zeros and 9/11s and all, they're seeding this in your mind. They're using COVID-19 as an event to try to sway this into a new direction, just like they did with Pearl Harbor, just like they did with 9/11, and just like both of them, the changes they claim are temporary afterward will never, ever go away. It's amazing that we can't realize that about our own history. But as I said, this is what we call a little bit too on the nose. I mean, it's just like right on the nose, exactly what we're saying. Yet when I state that elitists desire to use COVID as, or was created to be, the justification for a dramatic change in the way we live our lives, just like 9/11 Pearl Harbor, I'm called a conspiracy theorist. As she states that that's exactly what we should do. It's just the dumbest thing ever. But on top of all of it, we're staring at a situation where they're saying, we're going to build back better, especially while the United States files 709,000 new unemployment claims amid the new spike of cases based on tests with potentially 90% false positives. Sounds sound to me. Sounds. Well done, Ryan. U.S. workers file 709,000. That's just, think about how many, that's, you know, 750,000. These people are struggling. They don't have jobs. They don't have income. That $1,000 check months and months and months ago is not really doing much. I don't know about you, but I only got one. My family still hasn't gotten theirs. So what's the point? The point is to convince you that things are so, so bad that we need this new direction because you're here because things are bad, not because their actions about the fake issue that we're dealing with. Just like I keep telling you, you are under U.S. sanctions. They've created a situation that's so desperate and so bad and so negative and still pushing you there so that you don't care what the solution is. You don't care who it is. Just get me out of this problem. That's what U.S. sanctions are. And there's many examples of how this is affecting everybody. As my Mises Wire points out, lockdowns haven't brought down COVID mortality, which there's two points to be said here. If lockdowns have not brought down, that's why they're pretending Swiss cheese mode, right? Like it's not one or the other. It's all of them combined, which it's just, you know, the point is if these things had an effect, you would see an effect. That's why lockdowns don't. You can see these locations where lockdowns have been implemented and mortality increases. Some of the locations with the strictest lockdowns and the most adherence to masks have some of the highest issues. How does that make sense? So first of all, the lockdowns didn't actually bring down mortality, and they're doing it again anyway, despite what I truly think is the lockdowns spiking the mortality, but they have killed millions of jobs, which on top of everything just makes it that much more important. The lockdowns are having a catastrophic effect in far more ways than mortality that we will, it's almost unquantifiable at this point. And yet they keep pushing it in, despite the fact that even the WHO just told us that that's not what we should be doing. And then they attack the WHO, despite claiming that we weren't allowed to challenge what they said. That sounds stupid, but so does everything else in this whole thing. Lockdown killings. Horrifying stats raise fears of fresh spike in domestic abuse deaths. The point in this is, guys, that people have been hurt a lot. People are being beaten up. Children are being attacked. The spikes are crazy. I'm going to wrap it up here at the end here. I've already gone pretty long today, but these lockdowns are continuing to increase all these problems for children, for women, for everything. And all we can continue to do is point to numbers that we can't verify coming from people that have already got it wildly wrong using tests that are constantly showing false positives and pretending like that makes sense. We are in a really weird time, guys. And to finish it off, as we're talking about the UK and the horrible things happening to people in the UK as well as around the world, this is the world in which they're living outside of those homes riddled with problems because of the lockdowns. Get ready to be shocked. As it's entitled, UK Police State, from November 15th.
Why are you stopping them? Why have you stopped them?
Well, we're not going to discuss that with you, for their protection.
Yeah, no, it's because they're going to a march, I think.
Oh, is that what you think?
Yeah, I reckon, yeah. Oh, I think.
Where are you off to?
We're going Check to work off. Out training.
I mean, first of all, just take note. Everybody everywhere is being stopped and addressed and accosted by police every 2 feet down the road.
Don't touch me.
Now, because they're walking by and filming, they're being chased after. right? So these police start following after them, not saying, hey, you, you're under arrest because of this thing. They're following them they're basically messing with them. They're teasing them. They're walking by going, oh, you want to move away? Like, just watch. Just the reason I'm saying that is because people would want to argue that, oh, well, they did something beforehand, which as far as my research showed, that's not what happened. But the way the police respond after they start to walk away, it shows you clearly that they're just messing with them.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me. You got no reason to stop me. No, you're not. Why are you arresting me? You got no reason to arrest me. You got no reason to arrest me whatsoever. I'm walking. I've got no reason to be arrested. Don't talk to me. We've done nothing wrong. We've done nothing wrong. We've done nothing wrong.
Don't tell me why. Don't touch me.
Don't. Go away. We've done nothing wrong. We've done nothing wrong. We're walking up the street. We've done nothing wrong.
Hello.
Hello. We're walking away. We're walking away. We've got nothing. Go away.
See, that's the cop. That's the cop egging them on. You want to engage with them? They're following them. They're not arresting them. They're not grabbing them. They're walking away. And they're basically threatening them and teasing them.
Leave us alone. We've got nothing to say.
Say, look, if he wouldn't start walking away like that, if he was in pursuit of somebody, they're so power. These people are drunk on their power. I mean, let alone the fact that none of this is constitutional or, you know, human rights. However you want to look at this, these people are simply walking down the street. And whether it's because they're not wearing a mask or because they're not quarantining, these things that are wildly off the rails and violate what we just looked at. But it gets bad when they just continue to walk away. So right there, the point was that ended, right? So if they were actually after them for any other reason than just to prod at them and poke at them and make them feel insecure about what they were doing without any legal justification, they would have arrested them or done something. But now because they're simply still here, which they just can't abide by because, you know, respect my authority, they're going to do what you're told. They just mob after this guy. Like, was it standing there? Clearly breaking the law.
Yeah,
please cover your ears, children out there.
Damien, don't let them spray you. Damien, don't let them spray you.
I mean, what is happening right now? What in the world is the point of any of this? Now ask yourself this, are they not violating social distancing? I make this point every time. For all those out there that said, but they got masks on. I thought you guys told me that masks was only one part of it. I thought you were the one that said it only protects your grandma. And you do it. It's just so funny how that is clearly not what everybody says or what they think. They will stress that when they're trying to be honest about it. But at the end of the day, people all over the place that are wearing masks are walking down the street and walking in. They act like when they have the mask on, it's okay because I'm doing what I'm supposed to. Even though the mask is clearly not even close to doing what you're told it is and has pretty small effect on what's going on today. And that's shown by all the locations that have some of the most severe mask mandates are having some of the worst problems. Del Bigtree did a whole show on this. So regardless, it's okay to break the thing that they're arresting him for because he's doing it. Doesn't that also create the problem? Sure it does. But let's put him in a jail cell with other people right when we arrested him for not being social distance with people. Now I have to say before it gets to it, when I saw this today, it really bummed me out. Like, it's just really hard to continue to see how crazy it is right now. But there's a note here to end on that I thought was positive. That regardless of how messed up this is and how wrong it is and how violating this is, that these people's rights aren't being, their government or their police, the people that are supposed to be fighting for them, could care less about what's right for them or what they're illegal for them. That in the midst of this horrible moment, that this guy has the wherewithal to say something funny, to do something that makes it all seem like a joke, because it is a joke. And that is how we have to win this. I think it was Derek shared a meme the other day that showed that kind of, now I'm forgetting what movie that is, that old movie where the woman in the dress is swirling on the hilltop with all the flowers. And it shows a couple of cops accosting her in all gear and in riot uniforms. And it just basically showed, you know, it made the point of saying, like, you know, even in the midst of this horrible situation, you know, acting like, you know, the point is acting like there is things to be positive about, acting like you're not concerned about it or whatever it was. I'm ruining the meme, but the point is that there's a message to be taken here, that even in the midst of this horrible situation, we need to be bigger than all of it. We need to realize that we as individuals, like I said, have the power to actually change this if we see that we can and realize that we can come together and make a difference, and also realize that this kind of mentality is the only way we're going to get past this. Watch what he says.
They arrested him for not walking fast enough after the circle. Because he didn't leave quickly enough, but he's done that. Thank you.
I'm a winner.
Even the horn afterward kind of made it better. If you didn't hear it properly, he saw that she was next to him and he screamed out, "I'm a winner." That made me laugh for like 10 minutes because the guy, he's making fun of him, right? I mean, he's downplaying the seriousness of the situation, and that just made it all better. Might be not all better, but, you know, in that moment, it gave me hope. It inspired me. It made me realize, you know what, screw them. They don't have the right to do this. And he's proving that point, and he's showing them that they're not powerful enough to make him feel bad, to make him feel like he did something wrong, just to make a joke out of it. like he just won something. Like, he, you know, I'm the winner of the day. I'm the one that didn't wear a mask. It just cracked me up. But it's horrifying, though. And just to end on the note of positivity, to realize that we can overcome this tyranny, whether mentally or physically, it's so very important that we realize that we're capable of that, because this is the future that they're building for you. So it's, as always, it is on you to choose to not allow that to happen. Manifest your own destiny, because this is where we're going, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining me today. Long show, as usual, longer than I thought it was actually going to be, but there's so much information to get out. And as I'm coming to realize, there's so many out there that kind of use our show as a research show for their own shows, which is great. That's fantastic. The more the information gets out, the more we can reach people. That's really all that matters. So thank you for being here today and thinking for yourselves and asking questions, and help me get this information out, right? Share the link, get it in front of people. Because that's the best we can do at this moment, in a place where our government will not actually listen to what the people want, short of violent revolution, which, as I always argue, is not the solution here. But as the truth has always held in history, that there are times when you are driven to such action. And I'll tell you right now that if it comes down to it, something being forced on me and my family, well, I will resist. Period. So we all need to realize out there that that's that is a marker that we need to set for ourselves right now. At what point are we going to allow this to continue? And at what point are we going to step in and say no more? Because I truly believe that if we all do this collectively, and if we all stand up together and show them that we are not going to allow this, and that it could lead to something far more serious if they put us in that position, which we shouldn't be put in, that maybe, just like with Denmark, we could see some kind of difference, which doesn't mean that we've won. We've only delayed the problem. So what we need to do as individuals is think beyond this broken system, and not just think, you know, one more person. Let's vote in this one guy, Republican this year, next year it's a Democrat. They'll save everything. The savior complex is what they bank on. Don't fall for it. Thank you for being here, everybody. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.